Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, January the 24th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens.
Here.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item three is our flag salute, and we're privileged to have Daniel Simonez from Knights of Columbus here. Will lead us in the flag salute. If you would remain standing for our invocation, Rabbi Norman Mendel from Congregation Beth David is here to give us that as well.
If you'll please stand and face the flag, please. Put your hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Decided that he would hire an architect to build a house and that he wanted it to be a very beautiful home. He said, the only condition is that I'm going to be away for a protracted period of time on business, so you go ahead and see that this house gets built. Indeed, they did, and while the man was away, the house was being constructed. The only thing was that as time went by, the architect and the subcontractors and the people decided that, well, maybe we can do a little shortcut here, and we can make a little adjustment there, and maybe instead of this material, we can substitute that material, etc., etc. The house was built. The man returned home and said to the architect upon his arrival, I'd like to view the new home that I'm going to be living in tomorrow morning. Let's meet. Indeed, they gathered the next morning, and they met, and the very wealthy man who contracted to build the house said to the architect, you know, I actually have been thinking about this, and I travel a great deal. I've got other homes than this one. And to tell you the truth, when all is said and done, I'm really not going to spend much time in this home. So the keys, here they are. Architect, I want you to live in. Well, so it is with community. We build our home. We make adjustments. We compromise. We do all kinds of things. But we have to remember that that which we create is indeed the home in which we're going to live. And so we're going to gather together tonight to meet, to deliberate, to make decisions. May the decisions be blessed with wisdom, with God's presence in the life of all of us. May we feel a sense that when we make the adjustments that inevitably as human beings we must make, they must be for the better, for the home and the community in which we live is going to be dependent upon the decisions we make and what we do. May God bless them, as we say, Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi. And Daniel, before you get too far away, I hope you have some notes there to keep us up to date on the situation with Knights of Columbus. What are you folks up to these days?
Thank you, Mayor. I do have three events we're going to be sponsoring this next month that I would like to let you know about. On February 11th, that's a Saturday, we are hosting our annual Alpha Dinner fundraiser. We'll be hosting it's our Cornish game, wild rice, mushroom stuffed chickens with baby carrots. Mike Van Billingham usually puts this on. It's $10 for sit-down or takeout. The funds go to Alpha, which you may be aware is a local organization that assists unwed mothers who have decided to keep their child, and they support them with a child up to 2 years of age. On February 19th, we are hosting our pancake breakfast in conjunction with the Tri-County's Blood Drive at St. Patrick's Church. And for all of those who donate blood, we'll have a free breakfast. The Knights do pancakes, sausage, biscuits, gravy. You will not go away hungry. And on February 25th, we do our annual highway cleanup. As you're coming into Arroyo Grande, you will see our sign. There's a two-mile section the Knights take care of in cleaning up the debris and trash, and we do that once a month.
Thank you very much, and we'll try and see if we can't be represented at least the 11th and the 19th. And I'll ask these folks if they want to grab a orange bag and head to the freeway, but I don't know. So thanks very much for being here and delivering the flag salute for us. And that will take us to item 5, which is special presentations. We have one this evening. This will be a proclamation for the Grand Jury Awareness Month. And I would like to ask Robert Myers and Val McClure to meet me at the dais. I have to watch Councilmember Costello's knee. It would not be pretty if I ran into it. Well, gentlemen, it's a privilege this evening for me to be able to present an honorary proclamation declaring February 2006 as Grand Jury Awareness Month. And I'll read this proclamation. Whereas the civil grand jury consists of a panel of 19 citizens, which serves the citizens of the County of San Luis Obispo for a one-year period after selection, and whereas the individual grand jurors are selected from a list of 30 volunteer applicants that have been screened and qualified by the judges of the Superior Court, with final selection of the 19 obtained by random drawing, and whereas the jurisdiction of the grand jury extends to all activities of local government within the geographic limits of San Luis Obispo County, including public-private transactions, and whereas the grand jury is granted subpoena powers that extends to records, persons, and entities, and parallel powers to undertake independent investigations and issue public reports detailing the results of these investigations, and to function as a completely independent, autonomous body, and whereas the primary function of the grand jury is to provide independent oversight into the efficiency, effectiveness, honesty, and impartiality of government, and whereas the grand jury in a large measure relies upon public awareness and responsiveness of the public to its public reports, which detail its findings and recommendations, and whereas it is believed that public awareness of the grand jury's function and purpose can be furthered by government declarations of awareness. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, mayor of the city of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the city council, do hereby proclaim February 2006 to be Grand Jury Awareness Month in order for all citizens to become better acquainted with the purposes of the grand jury, to give attention to the grand jury's public reports, and to encourage public participation in the grand jury process. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to present this to you. Thank you. And feel free, the microphone is yours, and I'll let you have this, Val. And feel free to add some comments.
Val is the grand juror. I'm the former grand juror, so he'll speak to this.
Huh? I've been asked to say a few words about the current grand jury. I'm one of the 19 members of that jury, and we serve for a year, as the proclamation said, and we're from all parts of the county. We have three members in South County, and then the rest are scattered out in Cambria, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and all San Luis Obispo, and all over the county, and we're very well represented in terms of area. We've been meeting since last July, and we're a very active grand jury. There are two kinds of grand juries. There's the civil grand jury and the grand juries that take care of things like Mr. Jackson and his problems. We're a civil grand jury. And it's an investigative body, and we can go and investigate many facets of the government, county government. We go to hospitals. We have to visit all the prisons in the county during the year, and we write reports on these. We work off of two different ways to come up with things that we work on. One is subjects that were of interest to the jurors in a round brainstorming sessions. The other is two complaints that we receive. And this year we received about 50 complaints as of this last week. Each of these complaints has to be answered, and investigations have to be made into the complaint. So it's a very busy time. We're organized into four committees, Each committee handles a different area of interest. In those four committees, there's between five and six subcommittees, and two jurors are on each subcommittee, and each juror serves on one major committee and two subcommittees. So we have quite a bit of work that we're handling. Right now, we're writing quite a bit of our report that you will see publicized in the next few months. So it's a very interesting experience. I highly recommend it. You get to meet all different people in the county, and you make some lasting friends with your fellow jurors. It's open to anyone that would like to apply to be a juror, and I'm sure you would find it a very good experience. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Could I have about 1 minute, to Mayor?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. My name is Robert Myers. I'm here in my capacity as a former grand juror, but mostly as a officer and director of the former Grand Jurors Association of San Luis Obispo County. Part of my purpose is to advise any in the audience who would like to become a grand juror. It is a worthwhile experience. It serves a public need. And there is life after grand jury. So once you finish your grand jury, you can join the former Grand Jury Association. And once you've done that, then you're entitled to join the State Grand Jurors Association, which is a state body that fosters all things and all laws that are good for grand juries and tries to keep the Sacramento honest and have them not to legislate away the grand jury. The association meets every month at Sycamore Springs on the last Tuesday of the month. Visitors are welcome. If you do become a grand juror, there is life after grand jury, and we'd welcome to have you come. Our primary purpose, of course, is to support the sitting grand jury, and we do lots of things during the year to help them with some of their functions and to training the grand jury, the new members, orienting the new members, and doing things of that sort. So I've said enough, so I think I will turn the mic over. Thanks, Mayor.
Good. Thank you. We appreciate the time and effort and all the volunteer work that the grand jury does. And when you're writing your report this year, remember that we're nice people down here and that we gave you this proclamation. Okay, so. Okay, good. All right, that takes us to item number 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. And we would ask that if you do come forward and share observations, again, items that are not on this evening's agenda, that you honor the 3-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward, this would be an opportunity. If you would, please state your name.
My name is Tom Martin. I'm from the garbage company, South County Sanitary, and I just wanted to remind everybody the new phone book is out. And if you turn to page 564, there's a little cardboard foldout that comes out. And behind that cardboard foldout is everything you'd ever want to know about any of the recycling programs and the composting programs that we operate. And this is a countywide guide. So it's very helpful for you. So that's there in your new phone book. Second thing is South County Sanitary has finally come into the 21st century. You can now pay your bill online at www.wasteconnections.com. As long as you have a bill in front of you, you can do it. I've gone on the site and I did it for my mother-in-law's house. So if I can do it, anybody can do it. Third thing is cleanup week, April 10th through the 14th. And the way you'll remember that is do it before you have to pay your income tax. It's the week before. So you'll remember. That's all I got.
One more time, Tom, on the webpage.
www.wasteconnectionswithans.com. And have your bill in hand because you need your invoice number, your bill account number to get it there.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Anyone else? Okay, if there is no one else, we will close the community comments and suggestions portion of the agenda. That takes us to item 8, which is the consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council normally approves in one action. Council's had an opportunity to review consent items 8A through 8E. If there is a item that the council would like to pull for independent action, then we will do so. But before we make a determination on that, this is also an opportunity for the public to come forward and comment on consent items. If there's anyone in the audience who's had an opportunity to look at consent items 8A through E and you would like to make a comment on any of those items, this would be an opportunity for you to come forward. Okay. We'll close the public comment period on consent, on the consent agenda. And what is the will of the council? Any items on consent?
Mr.
Yes,
Mayor, I'd like to
Member Costello.
I'd like to pull 8E, please.
8E as in Edward?
As in Edward, yes.
Okay. Any others? All right. Then I would entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8D.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I don't think there's anything in there this evening, so roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right, that takes us to 8E Edward. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is the consideration of temporary use permit for the street closures for the Amgen Tour of California bike race. I just wanted to ask if staff could maybe clarify, and I did discuss this with the city manager earlier. When this occurs, are we going to be shutting down and preventing pedestrian access across the street in the village? And for how long a period of time?
This event is scheduled for February 24th, and the bicyclists are due to arrive in Arroyo Grande coming from the east, traveling west at 10:30 a.m. The anticipation is about 120 bicyclists. They'll be traveling at a pretty good speed, such as 25 miles per hour. They won't be in the village, but what's expected to be 5 minutes or less. The answer is yes, there will be no pedestrian crossing. There will be a request that council approve no parking on Bryant Street so that spectators may have a full view of the event, and also for ensuring safety of the bicyclists, where they can have curb-to-curb travel lanes. They will turn on Bridge Street left. They'll be along Bridge Street down to Traffic Way, additional no parking. The bicyclists will clear Bridge Street onto Traffic Way and then to Fair Oaks. There'll be no further closures or no further no parkings from that point. Just to give you an exit, they will continue Traffic Way to Fair Oaks, turning right onto Fair Oaks and going past the high school, then left onto Valley Road. We'll have sufficient help with our police department patrol, as well as the sponsors offering up to 20 personnel, which they call traffic marshals, who will be posted at different traffic control points along the entire route of the city. It's anticipated that, again, at any given point, it would be very short duration. They'll probably be out of town within 10 minutes to 15 minutes at the most.
So it's a real narrow window that we have.
Very narrow, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Any other questions on AD?
Just to clarify, so you're not going to close Fair Oaks or Valley Road at all? They're going to go through there?
The way they will operate is a rolling closure that will last a very short period of time, a matter of 2 minutes probably at each control point. It won't be a reroute. It'll simply be a halt for that short period of time and a reopen as soon as they roll through.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion on 8E.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make a motion that we adopt 8E as proposed.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Councilmember Dickens. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens.
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Item 9, public hearings. We have one this evening, consideration of an appeal of the Planning Commission denial of plot plan review 05-008. And Rob, we understand this this is an appellant's request to continue this item.
That is correct.
Okay. Anything else?
There is a related item that we're awaiting determination regarding the Board of Appeals, and that's the primary reason for the request for continuance of this item.
Okay. Any council member have comments on 9A? If not, then we'll entertain a motion to support staff's recommendation.
Mr. Mayor, make a recommendation that we continue Planning Commission denial of plot plan review 05-008 230 Station Way until March 24th.
24th or 14th?
14th, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem. Oops. Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes.
Mr. Dickens. I forgot to change my little. Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie. Whoops.
Okay. All right, the motion carries. That takes us to item 10, continued business. Consideration 10A is consideration of the Village Green Master Plan. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We had our initial discussion on this item back on November 22nd, where we had the original plan or our first draft plan brought before the council. As you see here in the overhead, we did include those revisions based on council comment. These included reducing the number of street trees from 22 to 11, elimination of one of the interior trees, as well as eliminating the turf blocks, modifications to the proposed walking trails, and removing proposed revisions that were of concern to the Historical Society. Along these lines, we've also done some research with regards to the parkway. One of the things that was brought up at the November 22nd meeting was a underground drip irrigation system by Netafin is the name of the company. Staff was initially hesitant to invest in this product because we weren't able to find a city that actually uses it for turf. I spoke with the representative today, and what they're going to do for us is actually come out at no cost to us in one section of the parkway. They'll install the underground drip irrigation system. And then we can evaluate it to see if it works. Attachment 2 is the policies and procedures that were adopted at the last Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. We worked closely with Jane Lyon and other representatives of the Historical Society to come up with those policies and procedures, and those have come out very, very well. Once again, the bandstand is being dedicated on February 23rd. Mr. Jeff Ferber is here tonight to make a presentation on the plan specifically. There are no specifics species selected for the street trees as of this time. However, staff will work with Mr. Ferber to develop a list of alternatives and will present to the tree subcommittee of the Parks and Recreation Commission for selection. So at this time, I'd like to bring up Mr. Ferber.
Thanks, Dan. good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Jeff Ferber from RRM Design Group. Dan did a nice job summarizing, so I'm not going to belabor it too much. I'll just point out a few of the adjustments from the last time you saw the plan in November. And for reference, I do have a copy of the plan that was presented then. So if you have any particular questions, I can show you what it looked like. Essentially, probably the most significant thing was that the council elected to go with the grass parkway and concrete sidewalk. So the plan reflects starting over next to the school site, going all the way down Short Street, down Nelson, and then back up Mason until it gets to the property line between the two homes owned by the Historical Society. At the point that it gets to the museum house, the sidewalk there would be replaced and repaired in kind by city staff. So it's essentially just repairing what's there. The sidewalk is 4 feet wide. It matches the existing sidewalk width in most cases, including the other sidewalks in the village. And the parkway is about 3 feet. The trees were reduced in number by half, so there are 11 street trees, new street trees, rather than the 22 that were originally shown. They'll probably be relatively small in scale because of the SPC lines that are overhead. The sidewalk, which had previously, or the decomposed granite walk that leads from the existing walkway past the barn, was unchanged. But at this point, there was a meandering decomposed granite pathway you can see here. That was eliminated so that the area stays grass as it is. And then the sidewalk was continued from the sidewalk, which has been constructed behind the bandstand. And then it's picked up and carried on parallel to the fence line and out to Short Street. So it provides an accessible route in two locations, from this location here to the bandstand and then from Short Street. So it's kind of a minimal impact to the park green space, which was a desire and direction from the council, and still provides a nice access way. One new improvement that was kind of came out of the discussions on site and our further investigation and making sure that the bandstand is very functional is a small piece of walkway that comes from Heritage Square property to a new small white picket fence matching the picket fence that's in the front of their property. It will have a gate, and there will be times when the gates are open when there aren't functions going on so that people can flow back and forth between Heritage Square and Nelson Green. And then at times there are functions like a wedding going on, they could close those gates for privacy. At the point where Heritage Square meets Nelson Green, we had previously shown two pedestrian gateways, and it was decided that the large gateway that was in the middle with the large sliding gate was to be removed. So it's now just the picket fence and the planting. It's an 8-foot section of planting with a fence in the middle, which is exactly how big the existing hedge is that would come out. The resulting planting here would be 4 nice trees. There's no overhead lines, so it's a nice place to add trees to the Heritage Square Nelson Green property without taking away any functional space whatsoever. And there would be a new picket fence running along the property line, which would reflect the same style that the Historical Society has in their other picket fencing. And then there would be planting in front of it, still providing screening from the views of the cars and the bumpers that are there, but allowing a little bit of a nicer connection between the two properties. Once you get to the corner of the barn, there would be a tall white fence similar to the properties across the street, a little more ornate in design, painted white to tie in with the picket fencing, but providing privacy for weddings. So from the corner of the barn to the corner of Ruby House would be a tall fence to replace the tall kind of dog-eared fence that's there now. And then there would be a gateway into the property. I believe all the other improvements are the same. You can see the retaining wall, which staff installed, is reflected on the plan. There's a small amount of planting around the bandstand so that the staff does not have to maintain grass right up to the bandstand. It's a little bit more practical. And I believe, if I haven't left anything out, that concludes the discussions that came out of the meeting with Councilmember Dickens, the Historical Society staff, and a few others that met at the bandstand. We met one more time after that to review the plan prior to coming here, and I think everybody's in support. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have one quick question on this area here. When I was out there with at one of the meetings, I'm not sure if that was the very first one, I think it was, but there was some concern about the network of paths around what is a very mature tree right in here. And I'm looking at this cross over here. And how does that, you know, how does that integrate with the presence of the tree?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, the patterns of use underneath that walnut tree over the years, there are times when there's a lot of traffic, especially during some of the events that happen. And the idea behind the walkways is, one, it provides an accessible route that we need to have to the bandstand per the American with Disabilities Act. But I believe in the long term, by giving people a place to walk, that's probably better than having them walk anywhere on grass.
Well, specifically, we had looked at the base of that tree, the size of the trunk, kind of speculating on the root system, and the one issue that I had was just this cross piece here. I think originally we had looked at taking this thing all the way over towards the fence and having the pathway along here, and that would theoretically give that tree enough room to exist with a pedestrian impact. So that's primarily my question was, is there enough room given the size of the tree to have this crossover right here?
Well, two things I might say there. One is the drawing's relatively schematic, so there is time to make adjustments. However, that tree canopy goes essentially back to the barn. Its root system is probably another 1.5 times that distance to the trunk. So the root system goes where it was impacted by the barn, by the bandstand. And whether that walkway is next to the fence or where it is there, it's going to be the same impact to that tree. It's not going to be more or less if we move the walkway. You know, whether you have the walk or not, there might be some minimal change, but I really believe that the walkway is probably better than putting the grass back in and then having people go all over. So I don't think the location of the walk a few feet one way or the other, and certainly we have to take into account the trunk itself and not... You wouldn't want to be pouring concrete and forming and removing roots. So that's right. A good point. I think it's more likely to be right on grade. It's
that was my issue.
Yeah.
Was whether or not in the process of pouring that you would be down into the root system because of the proximity of that path to the actual trunk itself. So we might have to take a look at that.
Yeah, I think that as it gets closer, that little bit of investigation, but because of the existing grade of the walk that was recently poured, it sits up on the grade, and you'll match that. You're more likely to have to do excavation to match into the sidewalk at Short Street, and by that time you're way away from the tree.
Any other questions?
Was there any investigation as to the SBC lines? Because I noticed that I believe, except for the ones that are on Mason where there's power carried there, the other ones are just, it looks like phone and cable. Was there ever any thought about moving those across the street onto the other poles so that we wouldn't have to worry about the trees encroaching?
You are correct that it is just SBC lines, and we haven't been able to confirm anything yet, but that is something that we are going to follow up on. We're recommending that it not necessarily be made as part of this plan, but maybe set as a goal to see if there's any way we could get that underground consistent with this plan.
Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One quick question. Originally we had 22 trees on the perimeter, correct? And it's down to 11, but we only show 10.
Yeah, it looks like one got taken off.
Well, are we going to go for 10 or are we going to go for 11?
Well, you know,
such as these. So if there are members of the public that would like to come forward and address this item, this would be an opportunity.
Good evening, Mayor Farr and council members. My name is Kristen Barnich. I live at 212 Canyon Way. And I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the Tree Guild of Arroyo Grande regarding the Nelson Green Plan. We are very happy with the addition of the 11 trees, even though we see only 10 on the plan as well, on the perimeter of the park, and also thrilled with the addition of the turf parkway surrounding Nelson Green. We do want to be sure the trees planted will grow large enough to mitigate the effects of the existing expanse of asphalt, concrete curbs, and sidewalks. The Tree Guild's landscape architect will be happy to work with the city arborist to help determine the species of tree that would attain a decent size when mature, such as jacaranda, London Plain Sycamore, or Brisbane Box. The utility lines around Nelson Green should be undergrounded as a part of this improvement. Undergrounding will permit the selection of the proper tree for this application and visually enhance the project. Section 16.68.050 of the Municipal Code requires that our citizens underground their utilities when improving their homes. This same should apply to the city. We would like to request also that two additional trees be planted, one in the parkway located at the front of the Santa Manuela Schoolhouse parking lot, and one in the parkway in front of Ruby's house to close the sizable gap between the mature magnolia in front of the Heritage House and the next proposed parkway tree. We believe that this master landscape plan will greatly enhance the village residential neighborhood, and the Tree Guild is prepared to pay for and plant the 11 to 13 parkway trees. We thank the City Council for listening to our previous concerns and for taking appropriate action.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mayor Ferrara, council members, my name is Jane Line, 265 Pleasant Lane, Arroyo Grande. I speak tonight as president of the Historical Society. Firstly, I'd like to say thank you for your support and direction as we gave life to this project. I'm also here to say the collaborative process worked beautifully, and we are pleased with the outcome. Heritage Square will be more lovely and more functional. I give thanks also to staff and Jeff, all of whom worked very hard to ensure the best product possible resulted from all our efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward on this item? Okay. Seeing no one, we will close public comment on 10A and bring this back to the council. Councilmember Costello, why don't you start us off this evening?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no particular problems with the revisions as they come before us tonight. I guess I would maybe entertain some sort of discussion on the undergrounding of the utilities or perhaps at least look with favor on our consideration of dealing with the utilities in some sort of construction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too want to thank staff and Jeff and RM Design and all the folks that have collaborated on this particular effort. I think it's important. And I think that we have the makings of an outstanding master plan that can move forward. With that said, I would like to just make a comment in regards to what I would believe to be just more of a direction and a policy issue. And that is, when we look at this master plan, and Steve, as you mentioned, maybe we'll certainly investigate undergrounding the overhead utilities in the future. It would be my understanding and my belief and my recommendation that actually become first and foremost, that we actually look at that. We require that same requirement for all folks within the village to underground the utilities when improvements are made. I think it's imperative that the city of Arroyo Grande do the same as we do our improvements. So I think that's, to me, needs to be paramount in how we approach this issue. And I think with that also then kind of ties in nicely, I believe, to the master plan in regards to tree selection. I believe it really is important that we don't enclose the village green. I believe that when I look at the village green and when I look at that, I mean, we are, as we proceed defining this more and more, the village green is part of an even a bigger plan when we actually changed our zoning designation around here, this is all commercial. This is all commercially zoned. And what I'd like to be able to say is that when we look at this particular area, let's say the an antique shop over here, that when you stand out in front of this antique shop, you actually feel as if you're in the Village Green. The Village Green shouldn't start when you walk across the street. And I think that what I'm really proposing in the vision that I'm seeing here is that we have trees that are tall enough that would create a park-like environment but would also not feel like we're enclosed. And I think that the undergrounding of the utilities and planting the appropriate species is going to be imperative for the whole master plan. So that would be my recommendation. As presented by the Tree Guild, I'm certainly in support of adding a couple more trees. I was the one that was recommending via some comments that I received to not enclose this particular area. What the Tree Guild is suggesting is planting another tree here, which would actually be in front of Ruby's house, and I believe another tree in this particular area here, which doesn't impact the Village Green whatsoever, and I think it's a very appropriate suggestion. The other thing that I would suggest is in the staff report, it's and I know this is just a master plan, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty details down the road, but we've actually, part of our master plan, have included walkways and improvements within the Heritage Square area, much like we've done with our creekside enhancements. The city has moved forward and created walkways, and I believe that those were all done via transportation enhancement dollars or some grants that we've received in the past. When those possibly grants or other funding becomes available, I encourage both my colleagues and staff to look at the importance of undergrounding the utilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, actually, I really don't have a whole lot to add. I agree that I think the undergrounding of the utilities is really paramount to be included into this project, considering that the tree selection really will depend on what's above them. And I don't see how we can have tall enough trees that will not block sight lines, but low enough that will not be impacted by the utilities. Considering that at least on two of the frontages of Nelson Green, the utilities are only either phone and cable, and they actually have drops that go across the street. If undergrounding weren't feasible right now, to possibly move them to the adjacent side of the street, with the understanding that when and if they were underground, that portion would be the responsibility of the cities, would seem to be reasonable. I have no problem supporting the additional two trees that the Tree Guild would like to see added. I think this is going to be a real nice enhancement to the Nelson Green area, and I look forward to seeing it go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I think on the undergrounding issue, I probably should have asked a question on the pricing here, but I think if we look at the pricing of undergrounding here, it's probably more expensive than the project itself, probably by a factor of two or three.
Well, that was our concern, but that's what we want to look at. I mean, our objective is the same as everybody's discussing. We would like to do the undergrounding at the same time as this project. So it's really coming down to whether we could get SBC to do it, or maybe the cost, since it's just SBC, the cost may be a lot less than our most of our estimates on other projects have been for all utilities. So we need to get a handle on that. But certainly, we wouldn't have any problem you adding that in as one of the components of the plan, and we would just come back to you when we come to implementation and how we're going to phase these things. If the cost is at a certain, if the cost becomes restrictive, then it would impact how long, certain phases are in the schedule.
Yeah, that was actually my suggestion, is that we might phase this to do the parkway without the trees and the sidewalks until we can get a decision on this, so that we don't put in trees that aren't going to have enough size. If it turns out that in fact we can't get that done, then we might look at a different tree, or we might look at what we would ultimately be if we planted the right tree. If it's going to be 5 years to undergrounding, then we might plant the larger trees in anticipation of that. I too favor of adding the two trees. I think would be excellent. I'm really glad to see that we did get the demonstration project here on the underground watering system, I'll call it, for lack of a better term. Because I do think that actually we have a lot of other opportunities in our community to use that system, maybe where there's even less foot traffic, which could save a significant amount of water. I think we probably should look at a retrofit program based on that kind of use. There's a lot of small lawn areas within our city, both private and public, where I think that might be very useful. But actually, those are the two.
A tree species that would remain low enough to dodge utility lines. So I would strongly support the notion of undergrounding those things. There is some concern, and I think we have a letter or two here from some folks that have been in the community a long time, provided us the history of the Nelson Green, and again, recognizing that what we don't want to do in this area here is close it off. It's one of the reasons why we got rid of the rather ornate entryway into the bandstand, was that we wanted as much grass and as much of an open feel as we could possibly structure into this project. And certainly getting rid of those overhead lines and allowing for a taller tree that would provide a higher canopy but yet maintain the openness here. It's kind of tough to launch a kite with those power lines across there. So I would definitely support that. I would also support the recommendations of the Tree Guild for the extra trees, again, as long as we maintain this green area here as open as we possibly can. And I'm very happy that for the extra effort that staff put in, and Jeff for the trying to pull everything together in this drawing, and Historical Society, I think everybody came to the table. We walked away with a good product that will work for everyone, and that's what this is all about. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move that the City Council approve the Village Green Master Plan with the provision that there be a look at the cost of undergrounding and the phasing of the operation so that and the two additional trees, as well as looking at the size of tree based on undergrounding going forward.
I can second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. That takes us to item 11, new business. Item 11A is consideration of a pre-application revised conceptual plan for Pad I, including expansion of Pad M for Phase 2 of Five City Center.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I did have a PowerPoint, but I'll just read from it. Only had a couple pictures. This is a pre-application 04017, review of revised conceptual plans for Pad I, including expansion of Pad M for Phase 2 of the Five City Center. Just to go through some of the background information on Five City Center, it was approved and put in outdoor patio seating for Pad M, which was formerly Vignetto's, and also outdoor eating space between J&K, which is Trader Joe's, and Baja Fresh, and also decreased the size of Pad M. It was amended again in December of 2001, adding more space to what used to be Vignetto's restaurant, which brings us to February 8th of last year was the previous review of the proposed revised plans for Pad I, which was originally approved as a 30,000-square-foot commercial retail building in Phase 2. The previous proposal would have split Pad I into two smaller buildings with a total square footage of 33,200 square feet. There were concerns expressed by council at that time with the traffic impact, and this is basically the consensus was that the environmental review done at the time that the Five City Center was approved did not anticipate the real-life impacts of the success of the center. So in a way, it was more successful than anticipated with traffic impacts. There was also some discussion of additional freeway signage for a proposed Petco as part of Pad I, which would be visible from the freeway with use of a tower element. There was no consensus from the council on that element of the proposed plan. Bringing us up to the revisions, the current conceptual plan would split Pad I into three buildings totaling 33,000 square feet. These possible tenants would include Petco and Save-On. The proposal would also expand Pad M by approximately 900 square feet, and Chili's has been identified as a possible tenant for this building. It would also revise the parking layout with the end result would exceed the minimum parking required by the development code by 23 spaces. And then this is just, we went down again. I'll skip that. Just outline the next steps. We're here tonight to receive input from the City Council regarding the revised conceptual plans. Then the applicant would revise the conceptual plans as necessary and then submit a formal application to actually amend the conditional use permit and probably the plan sign program for the Five City Center. At this time, an environmental determination would be made as part of any approval, which would include analyzing the traffic impacts. And this would also be reviewed by staff, architectural review committee, and planning commission before returning to council for formal action. And with that, the recommendation is for the council to review the revised conceptual plans and provide direction to staff and the applicant. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
You know, what I think would be helpful would be to see if we couldn't deal with our technical problems. If we can't do the computerized overhead, is there
I do have color copies I can pass around if you'd like.
We have those as well. I was just wondering if there was any way we could get them out for public view. And I think that one's going to require transparency, wouldn't it?
The three buildings, I'm thinking of the two buildings, the two larger buildings. One of the considerations we had earlier was the traffic flow around those and the circulation that's going around there. Are these buildings structured so that there is any particular flow that's going to be necessary, or is it going to be multi-directional, or what's the intention with those buildings?
I think the applicant's representative could probably answer that in more detail, but it does have I believe it's proposed to be the Save-On building would have full circulation around that could be restricted to one way. And the Petco building, the loading area looks from the plans as if it would be a back end only.
Thank you. Those are the questions I had.
Any other questions? Okay, Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Tim, this would be more for you, I believe. Based on the conversation that we had the other day regarding the Walmart remodel and whether or not there was a requirement to build the adjacent, I guess, building, if there wasn't, could this be tied to that? I guess could we bundle them so that approval of this could also require the finished build out of phase one.
First of all, I don't believe there is a condition dealing specifically with a sequence of development or a requirement that Pad A or Site A1 get developed, although certainly it was contemplated within the plan. No, I don't see how you could condition this particular project with a requirement to also build on Site A1, but we could certainly give it a closer look. Of course, this is a pre-app, so when it comes back, we'll have a concrete answer for that question. But just off the cuff, I don't think you could tie the two together.
Other questions?
I have a question that may be for the applicant. It has to do with the small retail building. There's no elevation of that, and I'm specifically interested in the elevation from the driveway looking, I'll call it north or northwest there, whether what the sight line is onto Rancho Parkway. If there's somehow we can demonstrate what that is. I didn't see it in here.
Okay, well, why don't we hold that question until and is it going to be you, Carol? Are you going to come up? Okay. And we'll address that. Any other questions for Ryan?
Mr. Mayor, just...
Yes.
Just more, Ryan, just a clarification, and I probably can answer this myself, but basically we're looking at just giving some comments or some approval in regards to a conceptual plan. After tonight, then, what would be the process that we would be looking at in looking at these particular expansion of the restaurant area and then the three buildings? What would we be expecting coming back to us?
Depending on the comment received from the council, I would imagine that the applicant would take those comments into consideration and make any necessary revisions. Then it would be submitted as an amended conditional use permit that would go through the process, starting with staff advisory committee, architecture.
Any other questions? I have a couple, Ryan. Just want to point out a couple of things. First of all, the parking calculations, those came from where?
Those came from the applicant.
Okay. Just wanted to round out a little bit of the history on the dates and the activities that occurred around those dates in your staff report. I think it's important to note that what we did here also somewhere in that time progression was we converted a use for Trader Joe's. We took what was originally proposed here as small retail, individual retail, and converted it to specialty grocery. And compensating for that, this was where Edward Jones is, was originally proposed to be a fast food. So we changed the intensity of use and permitted a financial institution to come in here to try and compensate, again, for the intensity of use for both circulation and parking. So site or phase two has undergone some considerable modifications from a number of different directions. And I wanted to just make sure that we kind of got that in the record. What that has done, I think, is cast some different dynamics in terms of circulation, which we've been addressing, and also parking, which may come up again this evening. So those were just some initial observations that I wanted to make. Okay, if there are no other questions or clarifications, then we would ask the applicant to come forward and make a presentation. Good evening, Carol.
Oh, good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Happy New Year. I'm going to make that last as long as I can, by the way, since we're already almost through January. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates, and with me this evening is my client, Mr. Kenny Slott from Investec. I really want to thank you for this opportunity this evening to share our comprehensive program for Phase 2 with you and ask for your support of the changes. This evening's presentation really is a follow-up to our last presentation to you in October, and specifically in response to comments that were received during the February 8th, 2005 hearing. Your city clerk was gracious enough to allow me to review the tapes and the CDs for the Planning Commission hearings and the council hearings that I was not in attendance, and I've had an opportunity to also review the minutes. And I feel confident that the program you have before you this evening for Phase 2 of Five City Center has addressed council's comments about building size, location, parking, as well as circulation. So what we've been doing for the last, I'd say, 3 months is continuing our negotiations with Savon and Petco. We have kept the lines of communication open with Wells Fargo, and we are still looking forward to that. Bulb maintains itself, because I just have a few slides. Really, it's a comparison of the originally approved, as you can see on the left, the two gray building blocks, if you will, and the modified proposal for phase two on the right. We're now looking at Petco at 15,000 square feet, and that's the right-hand side of the two larger buildings. Savon on the left at 13,500, and the new building, as you can see forward there on Rancho Parkway, 4,500 square feet, and a small addition to the old Vignettos building for Chili's, who have a very specific size and shape. And I'm very impressed with them, because they have determined how long it takes to walk from the kitchen to the last table, and it's quite an operation. So I've been learning quite a bit from that entity. Slide two, thanks, Ryan. And I believe that you have seen the Petco elevations before, and the reason we do not have Savon's because we are still programming with them. And we will be bringing back through those elevations through the process as well. But I can guarantee you that the quality of the architecture will be very similar to Petco. I should mention as well, staff, in their initial review of our site plan, there's been substantial changes, obviously, to that, pushing the buildings toward the back. Based on your comments that the parking in the rear of these buildings seems to be underutilized, moving that parking forward, again, separating the buildings, actually minimizing the square footage, which allowed for us to have more parking than is required. But we were looking at, if I can go back, Ryan, I'm sorry, to the trellises on the rear elevation of Petco. There was a discussion, although that's a very nice architectural element, maybe looking at pulling those out toward the top of slope to provide really some screening for some of the what I call back of house activities. So those are the kinds of details that we're interested in working not only with council but with staff on as well. The Chili's elevations, I'm really, really excited that they are going to be recycling the Vignettos building. Up until very recently, because of their requirements, they were fully prepared to demolish that building and start all over. So this particular building looks like no other building, I think, internally or externally, except for some of the architectural details. And I really do have to applaud them for maintaining and recycling Vignettos and just adding on a small 900-square-foot addition to that, maintaining the parking as is, and that part of it, and in your packet but not on the screen, is the conceptual floor plan, and that little addition houses the new bar section of Chili's. With that said, I just want to make ourselves available to hear all of your comments. I'm hoping that you've seen that we've addressed many of the comments that you made at your February all Savon within the Albertsons, but this would allow them a much larger scale Savon. So that they seem to understand their requirements and their ability to be successful, and this seems like a good fit for them. And I think the familiarity also with Savon already being in the center and just moving, I think, is also probably a very wise business choice.
Do we know if this Albertsons, since Albertsons now has negotiated a sale to private investors, is this Albertsons one of the ones that's actually planning to stay as an Albertsons? It is. I see.
There's a nodding head, yes.
As far as you know, okay. Okay. Let's see. I think the rest are going to be pretty much just comments. So, yeah, that'll cover it for now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I did have a specific question on the new retail building, which has to do with its sideline. When I was up there looking north, trying to picture the size of this and how it may affect the intersection here with Rancho Parkway. So I'm just pointing that as something of a comment and a concern, but how tall that building is something I was specifically interested in. I was also interested in how the delivery activity, particularly on the Savon, is. I know this was something we talked about before in what you're calling back-of-house activities. Are you now proposing that you would screen, that you would, that's this area right here, are you now proposing that you would screen from the top of the bank here, between there and the homes behind it?
Yes, we would be planning to screen those activities, which, again, are considered back of house, so the truck movements, et cetera, you would not be able to see those. We think that that may be a more appropriate way as opposed to embellishing the face of the architecture on that side, but to pull out an element to screen those activities.
Okay. I would hope that between now and then something of a comment that you would check with the property owner there to make sure that that works for them as
yes.
well. And also based on the hours of operation there. And then the rest of it that I have are comments.
Thanks. Councilmember Dickens, did you have one question?
I just had one quick question. Carol, yes. In the staff report it talks, and I know that it was brought forth in, in our last pre-app in regards to a proposed freeway sign for Petco. That's not part of this proposal. I don't see where that's in here. So I'm wondering whether that has been eliminated or in regards to maybe the new design and the element and the sign on the Petco building itself might be viewed from the freeway, or what are your thoughts about continuing with pursuing maybe an additional monument sign visible from the freeway?
The Petco building was designed with the architectural features of a tower to elevate, if you will, their signage. And I'm sure you well know, after dealing with the center so long, that many of these tenants have strict, if you will, signage programs that need to be accommodated, obviously, in each jurisdiction. So I think they're all learning that they have to work with what the signage requirements are. Regarding the monument sign, I still think that's on the table, and we'll be bringing back an entire sign package to you that would incorporate.
I like the separation. I like the scale of these two buildings. I guess my question is, what would be the impact of putting it maybe at least one row of parking on this side of the building and allowing for truck access in this area? And we had talked originally, I think, about the necessity for having loading dock operations as opposed to using a ramp on a truck and wheeling it into storage area behind Petco. The long and short of it is the goal would be to eliminate, if possible, a truck sweep around this building, particularly if it's going to be after hours. That we had talked about that concept, and that would fix the issue here with the neighboring homes. You got one right here, right off of a service road, and then you've got the other one right across via Vaquero. Any chance of going back and taking another look at that?
I absolutely think so, because we're programming with Savon right now to determine loading docks. I believe there's going to be a drive-through pharmacy. So those are the things that the architect's currently working on, and I'd be more than happy to share those. And rest assured that anything we do, that we'll be doing public outreach with those neighbors to make sure that they understand what our proposal is, and they may have some good ideas to share with us as well, since this is their neighborhood, and they would know better than most of us exactly what's occurring there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Was that it?
That is it, unless
okay.
you have anything else for me.
All right. Then while we're in the mood to hear comments, if there's any other member of the public would like to come forward and comment on this item, this would be an opportunity to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment on 11A and bring this back for additional comments and observations on the part of the council. And why don't we start at the other end with Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you. Peters, Mayor. Let's see. I'll start off with things that I see that I really like. I agree with you. The Chili's, I think, is excellent. If there's a concern with the Chili's, will be the traffic impact, I think, because there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to be very successful there. I'm glad to see that they can reuse the building because I think it's a very attractive building. Going down my list, this is something that was brought up as far as the freeway sign. I did notice the way the monument is aimed there that there would actually be some freeway frontage with the Petco sign, and I know that I was one of the people that was concerned with that before. I guess I'll qualify it. Before, I think there was some even more issue about whether it was going to be seen from the neighbors' homes also. From this angle, I'm having a hard time saying if that would be accurate or not, whereas before, I think it would have been for sure. So I will say that I definitely do not want to see a sign that can be seen from the homes. As far as the freeway, my preference would definitely be not to have a sign there. There's no doubt about it. At the same token, hands tied there. But it seems to me that we should be worrying about that also. That vacant lot is just it's doing no one any good right now. So I would definitely applaud you if there was a way to get that built out. Let's see. I think the trellis idea of moving it out to the screen sounds like a very good idea. The traffic mitigations, we went through it in depth before. We're not obviously talking about tonight, but there's no doubt it's going to be a very integral part of this being a successful project. I can't understand why we need another pharmacy in town. Every time we get one, I'm going, how many more do we need? But especially now when you're saying that they're not even going to close the other one. But as far as the other retails that you're looking at with the Petco, I think that'll be probably very successful, and I think the Chili's is going to be phenomenally successful. So you're going to have some tenants here that are going to do very well, which will be a benefit to the existing tenants that are there, but it's also going to mean that our little sleepy phase two is now going to look more like phase one as far as traffic. So I can't say that enough, that's going to be a real, real serious a piece of the pie as far as how well this is going to work. Let's see, were there any other issues that I had? I believe that's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to echo some of the things that Ed was just talking about. One of the things that I'm going to be very concerned about is going to be the traffic flow and circulation, particularly at this intersection. It's been a key component in a lot of discussions we've had, and we'll be looking very carefully there. Another thing, and I can't tell from the drawings whether the entranceway in here, it almost looks like it's going to be restricted so that as you come in, you're going to be forced to go over here. Will there still be access? And I think we need to make sure that we still have access over into this portion as you enter from this part of this arc. One of the things that exists right now, there's a lot of business that goes on between the ice cream and the restaurant that's here now and Trader Joe's. And people are parking out here now to service these buildings. They're already out in towards this end of these aisles. I know whenever I go there, I end up having to park down here. You can never park in close to the buildings. So I suspect that if Petco is a very successful, we're going to have a lot of impact here, and there's a lot of impact already here. So you're going to have to look very carefully at circulation in here and the parking. Numbers notwithstanding, we may have 40, 50, 60 spaces more than we need, but if they're all over here and everyone's trying to get down in here, it's not going to be very successful. It's not going to be very useful to the customers that come. So that's going to be something you really want to look at. Also, if you're going to have a drive-through here, I'm not sure whether the drive-through goes on this side. If it does, it's going to be very difficult to add parking on this side of the building, as the mayor has suggested we might want to be looking at. Moving the loading dock over to this side of the building is well and good, but if that's where you wanted to have the drive-through, then that's moving the drive-through over here. I don't think you want the drive-through on the back. I don't think we want the drive-through on the back here. This parking area is going to be extremely crowded. And where's the overflow going to go for Chili's? Are people going to come over here and park near the Edwards building after hours and then be crossing here? That's something we want to look at, pedestrian access and how that's going to work. But that parking lot was not big enough for Veneto's when it was there, and I think Chili's is going to be probably more popular than Veneto's was, and we're going to see a lot more traffic there, particularly, I notice it says to go, so there'd be people coming in to get their food, picking it up and leaving with it. So all of these go back again. Circulation, traffic are going to be key components of whatever you come forward with, but I will keep an open mind and look at them, but those are going to be my strong concerns there. I also don't want to see a plethora of signs added to this. I wasn't a big fan of putting the sign on the freeway side of Trader Joe's. I really believed that Trader Joe's, once people knew it was there, was going to do quite well without having to have the sign on the back of the building. I'm not too offended by what I see for the Petco building, but if you're going to come back and ask for additional signs beyond that, I'm going to be look with a very critical eye at whatever you come and ask about. So those are my concerns. Those are my comments.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm thrilled to see what's coming forth. I think this is something that I think you guys have thought through, and I really appreciate all the work you've put into it. I think, just my gut feeling, even though I know you've gone through the parking, my gut feeling tells me it's underparked because I think it is going to be successful, and that's a good thing. I'm not sure what to do about that. As I look at this, you're utilizing your space. It's well laid out. I'm certainly going to be looking at the impacts behind Save-On and Petco in regards to the loading docks to the neighborhood. I think that's going to be real key as we become good neighbors with those folks in this new pad that's being put in. I'm certainly not in favor of, and I wasn't in favor of Trader Joe's putting a sign up and doing another monument sign. I think that if these buildings can be aligned appropriately to highlight, the occupants, I think that'll be adequate. I do believe that this, certainly is a regional shopping center. We're not. Once people know this is here, it's here. I know it's marketing issues, pulling people off the freeway and so forth. But I really think that the vast majority of the sales that are going to take place are going to be from local folks who know what's there and how to access it. As my colleagues have stated, we've already gone through it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but the circulation patterns and those types of things will be real important for us to look at as well. And I think we've kind of some real good recommendations thus far. I like the architecture. I think it fits in. I think that we're definitely going to, do some nice things up there. And it's just a matter of working out the details. But I'm real pleased with what I see so far. Thank you.
I mean, if the best situation would actually be maybe try to get Trader Joe's to swap locations here, partly because you're going to have significant, I know it's not going to happen, but significant conflict between Chili's and Trader Joe's here in the battle for parking. There's nobody in Vignettos, and they're already parking over here because it's closer. So it'd also give them a chance to do much better loading than they do now. But, again, that's just in an ideal world. I do have concerns about the additional retail sign here and how that's going to affect the visual. I do think it's probably, even though it meets code, it is probably underparked and maybe misparked based on, again, the two major activities are Trader Joe's and Chili's, and they're right next door to each other. So the other areas will be underutilized, and this area will be massively utilized. I will say I'm just kind of disappointed in all of our discussions about traffic that we realized that really what we want to do is see the front entry to phase one used, and here we now have a tenant who basically lined up with the front entrance to phase one is now moving over here to where actually this isn't the sleepy little part of this. This is actually based on the traffic counts that were in this report is actually where most of the activity is. There's actually more activity at the entrance here by Trader Joe's than there was anywhere else in this entire project. So the ideal location for Save-On is not over here at all, but actually over next to Walmart in what I guess we're calling the Gap. I realize we don't get to direct the tenant, but it certainly is disappointing that we're not seeing where we actually have the traffic capacity, that we're not seeing that utilized. Instead, we're seeing it crammed over here. I think those address my specific concerns. I think I've expressed the other ones, but I still have some concern about whether we can add the extra lane over by Quiznos there. It just still seems marginal to me, but again, I realize if that doesn't happen, then I don't see the whole thing happening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I mentioned earlier that I did not have an opportunity when this came back to go over in detail some of the traffic mitigation. As you've heard many times over, Rancho Parkway in this particular area is going to continue to be problematic because of the increased intensity here, coupled with the fact that what you have is a tremendous amount of traffic that comes from the other end of Rancho Parkway, which serves all of the Rancho Grande area and all of the housing along the Highlands and all of the housing along James Way. This is the main thoroughfare into both Phase 1 and Phase 2. So what I would like to do before I forget is go back to, I believe, one of the mitigation measures that Councilmember Arnold originally brought forth, in which I've had an opportunity to observe, again, kind of the circulation dynamic in here with the housing density. I guess in relation to the use of the shopping center, what I'd like to come back to is the notion of that second rear entrance, by chance.
I don't.
Okay. If you can visualize the entryway in Phase 1 in relation to Camino Mercado and West Branch, maybe it's me, but I can't even see that. Is it my tired eyes? Okay. Well, maybe we don't want to touch it too much. Okay. All right. We'll do kind of a verbal description here. I'm talking primarily about the single access off of Camino Mercado, and I'm not going to use the overhead. But the reason why we positioned it so close to Camino Mercado was, again, for the truck noise and to try and keep truck traffic from verging into the residential area farther up Camino Mercado. So we didn't put a second access. It was discussed at the time. But the main concern for the residents at the time, again, was the fact that we wanted to maintain truck access close to Walmart, close to the freeway, and so on and so forth. But I think if we move roughly behind the the west end of Albertsons, the slope of the bank levels out considerably. The street is right there. And if we are able to put in a passenger vehicle access with directional signs out on Rancho Parkway, and I've seen this at other regional shopping centers, and also directional signs at what is going to be the signalized intersection of West Branch and Camino Mercado, that actually names the stores that you can access off of Camino Mercado. What we do then is we divert that traffic, that volume of traffic, away from this problematic intersection. And I really believe that would pay us strong dividends. You don't have to, it's not a large investment to do that. So I would strongly recommend that we take another look at that. I'm not in favor of, I think we had originally talked about getting elaborate with roundabouts and things like that. I'm not in favor of that. But I am in favor of some directional signage and that rear entrance, because I think it would be kind of a cost benefit for the amount of traffic that it could potentially divert.
Mayor, if you wouldn't mind, because you weren't there, but I did send you one of these. Could you identify that? Is that the, we call it, lovingly, the Arnold plan? But
yeah.
Okay, good.
Where is it? Yeah.
I want to be clear. It's that area where it's there's not as much gradient as you were saying.
Yeah, that would do it.
Good.
In fact, looking at the insert now is in place, and I know they're going to be successful. I agree with my colleagues. I think Chili's is going to be immensely successful there. There's not going to be a parking place to be had in Phase 2. And I know that there was a trade-off with the reduction of size of these buildings and the repositioning of these buildings, which caused this. This is the 4,500 square foot multi-tenant building. Is that correct? I think if you put a project, I'll be honest with you, if you put this site plan through today with those three new structures and the addition to what will become Chili's, I probably wouldn't support it. What I would support is a progressive approach. What I would support are these two buildings and the extension without this additional 4,500 square feet, because my gut tells me that you're going to need every inch of extra space for additional parking. So if I were to do this today, I would go ahead with this, and then I would observe. And if it turns out that that whole area does fill up, which I believe it will, we may not have room for this. That's the long and short of it. And I understand that you're trying to get back some space that you lost. But at least as far as I'm concerned, when we started down the path of reconfiguring the entire concept of Phase 2, as far as I'm concerned, all bets are off. When we started changing the intensity of use, that's when we started to deviate from what was projected in terms of traffic and parking. So at this point, to be very honest with you, I would not pay much attention at all to parking calculations. I think what we need to be paying attention to is the actual behavior of this particular center. And the only way that we can do it in time to make a difference is to do it progressively and to actually watch the dynamic of circulation and parking as it takes place. If it turns out that routinely we have empty spaces and there's room to accommodate a 4,500 square foot mixed retail, so be it. That's something that we can do down the road. But I would not want us to back ourselves into a corner and commit to something that could clearly cause us problems in terms of parking spaces. So I would take a very careful, cautious, progressive approach in this kind of a proposal. Before I forget, Tim, you and I need to have a discussion about A2. We can do that at some point. But I agree with Councilmember Arnold in terms of the use of that facility. And it came up, I think, you were not here. The applicant was not here. But clearly what was approved by the council is not what we have there. The council that was seated at the time is not what we have there. And it's not what we've had there for 5 years. And I think we're coming in. Do they have any idea that that's going to happen? I'm sure they do if they're watching TV. But have they voiced any concerns at all about parking?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Those are my observations. Any last comments? All right. This this is a kind of a receive and provide direction, so I don't think it requires a motion. And anything else that you would like clarification or additional feedback from us on?
No, Mayor, I don't think so. But if I have an opportunity to work with all of you through this process and not wait until we just see you at the bitter end, I would appreciate that opportunity.
Sure, and I think that's what we've been doing all along, and this seems to be a much better way of addressing these problems. I think we find it that way. We tend to resolve problems while they're still solvable, and instead of waiting until they're not. So, yeah, I think you'll find us receptive to that.
I appreciate that.
Sure. Okay. Anything else? All right. If not, we will move on to see how's everyone doing. Can you keep going, Joe? All right, if that, we'll move on to 11B, discussion of the City of Pismo Beach Fire Consolidation Study. Evening, Terry.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This evening, we're here to discuss the Pismo Beach Fire Consolidation Study. At the direction of the City Council of Pismo Beach, CityGate Associates prepared a fire department consolidation feasibility analysis to consider sharing parts of or consolidating fire services in the communities of the five cities. In that study, which you have attached to your staff report this evening, there were a number of findings, and there were also a number of recommendations. Those recommendations, if I may go over those just briefly, was that there would be one fire chief in a ideal consolidated fire department. That department needs competent, certified incident commanders on a guaranteed 24/7, 365-day-a-year basis. There would also be needed. The need for fire marshal and training officer positions, both competent, certified, and experienced. And the final recommendation that they made was that there would be an establishment of a shared emergency dispatch center. As agreed, the governing bodies of the partner agencies are now going to meet further to discuss feasibility and offer suggestions and recommendations. And this joint discussion will take place on January 30th, 2006, here in the Regional Center. And I was told this evening that pursue at the joint meeting the following, and these are strictly suggestions to staff, to the council. Even without consolidation, joint training is something that is very important to all the agencies, and the agencies must be capable of operating as one agency whenever we respond to large-scale incidents. This requires a high level of joint training and focused effort of standardizing equipment and procedures. Staff recommends a joint position be established and cost shared amongst all the agencies to coordinate this training. This should be at the battalion chief level, and it would also, by doing that, serve to increase the capability, the command capability, at major incidents on that 24/7 basis that we had talked about. Another suggestion that we're making to the council is that the joint aerial truck replacement program is something that could be pursued, especially in light of the fact that that replacement program is estimated to will be estimated to cost approximately $750,000. Since the ladder truck responds within all the South County communities, a joint issue to plan for and cost share could be the replacement of this truck as that time comes near, which is coming right down the road here for us. Finally, a joint dispatch facility might be considered. Currently, dispatch for fire and medical emergencies within the partner agencies is a function that is handled by as many as five different emergency dispatch centers just here in the in our communities. These dispatch centers are primarily staffed during most hours of the day with one highly trained emergency dispatcher, and when multiple incidents occur simultaneously, dispatch staffing can quickly become overburdened. Delays can occur, information may be lost, or emergency responders' safety may be jeopardized. The council may want to pursue a program to identify and evaluate options for creating a joint fire law enforcement dispatch center shared by the partner agencies. You see that there are some alternatives that are listed there that you may wish to follow. And if you would like to, any further clarification or discussion that I could be part of, I would turn it back to you, Mr. Mayor, and the council for anything further.
Okay. Questions or clarifications, first of all, for Terry on the staff report, any? Okay, if not, before we share our observations on this, I will allow the public to come forward. If any member of the public would like to come forward and comment on item 11B, this would be an opportunity. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the public comment then on 11B. Come back and start with Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll make some comments, but first, actually, I probably did have a question that I should have asked earlier. Part of the report in that respect, but from a level of service, I know we can always increase our level of service. You're out there on a day-to-day basis. Are you hearing from the community, the business community, the folks that there's a worry or a stress level that, you know, we're a small department and that our current level of service is not adequate?
Councilmember Dickens, I think that that's, if I may put a feather in the cap of the fire service right now in the five cities and generally speaking, that is something that is really a product of the fact that we have done as well as we possibly can with the limited resources that we have given the financial limitations that we've seen in the communities just due to our fiscal condition. We have done things that have probably bordered on being, well, let's just call them borderline as far as what we have been able to do. Your comment about asking, commenting about the fact that we have not had any large-scale incidents. I've had this conversation with several of the council members already, and large-scale incidents don't have to be a large building burning down. What they can be is a single-family residence where we really are required, just due to operational needs, to have as many as 15 or 20 firefighters there. And to get those folks there and to have those people trained is very, very difficult sometimes because we do have staffing issues. As you know, right now in both Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, we are staffing with two fully paid personnel on each engine company, and at certain times of the day there are additional personnel on the Grover Beach engine that come from their paid call fire force, and in Arroyo Grande we staff about most of the time 24 hours a day with an additional person from our paid call fire force, but there are times that we cannot fill that position. So we actually operate with two people on that engine company at times. There is a national standard, and of course national standards don't take into consideration at all the ability of the communities to pay, but there is a national standard that has been established that says that you will put four people on an engine company, and the reason that you put those four people on that engine company is because there are a number of tasks that have to be performed when you pull up at an incident to maintain safety both of the people that you're protecting, as well as the people that I am protecting, which is the fire force itself. So the community itself does not stand up and complain that we don't have, that we're not doing an adequate job, because we're trying like heck. The people are very, very dedicated and are doing a real, real good job. We're always on the verge, though, of, if I...
You know, does that reflect on the, you know, what I think that our staff, your staff, have contributed and continue to contribute, and the quality of commitment that they, you know, give to the job. And certainly I've been committed, and we've been working towards increasing those level of services and getting that paid staff and so forth. I do believe that it's a catch-22, and I think that's where I'm getting it, is that the catch-22 is that the public out there is extremely appreciative of what we have. I think they have a high confidence level in regards to the training and the professionalism that your department provides, and I think the other departments throughout the five cities area. And I certainly understand the complexities of the training, and when you respond, the need to have the appropriate personnel and so forth. With that, I think that what my commitment and what I'm my response to the staff report, and I think that we're here to discuss how we as a city are going to maybe comment in regards to our joint consolidation study meeting on the 30th. But I believe that staff has put together some outstanding recommendations. I don't believe, in my opinion, that moving forward specifically in, with a 100% complete consolidation at this point is fiscally feasible. I don't think it's prudent at this point, and I think that there are some intermediary steps that can be taken, many of which are laid out here through the staff's recommendations. I don't really see personally any additions that I would add to this. I think that some of these in and of themselves are pretty paramount and would be take some time to actually accomplish. And I think that if we were able to move through the four recommendations that are listed here in a timely fashion and address the issues that even these would promote, then we would certainly be one step closer to full consolidation, and that may be the model that we look at into the future. But I think it's premature at this particular time to step wholeheartedly into a full consolidation. So I'm supportive of staff's recommendations, and certainly hope that this is probably where we're going to land in regards to our overall approach with our sister cities and the Oceana Community Service District. So.
Council member, if I could just add, and excuse me, Mr. Mayor, just so I could respond back to Council Member Dickens, these alternatives are meant to be used perhaps as talking points, and the talking points can ultimately be applied toward that the fourth recommendation down there, which would be that we would then move forward to discuss this further in some sort of a working group. So that's the way these are offered to you.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, I think that's a great point, because when I looked at the alternatives, we had the approved staff's recommendations, and then the fourth item was agree to participate in a forming committee. And I see those as kind of need to. But what came up to me was, depending on how the costs were allocated, you were looking at somewhere between $60,000 to almost $1 million that would be incurred by Arroyo Grande. And if we could do consolidation and it would cost us $60,000, I think we'd all probably say three cheers. It's probably a worthwhile goal to pursue. I think the unfortunate reality is it's probably more like $1 million. And so my line of thought was, well, if we were going to entertain anywhere close to that, we could probably do a lot of things in-house that would increase our level of service for probably considerably less than that. So for that reason, I definitely wasn't in favor of moving to any kind of full consolidation at this time. but for the reasons that seem to make a lot of sense with the joint training. Obviously, I'm amazed that it's not happening already, considering how much work is being done, the fact that everybody does respond when needed. That seems to be a no-brainer, as well as if we're going to provide a ladder truck for everybody, it would seem fair that everybody would help pay for that ladder truck. And the joint dispatch was actually the one thing that I came away from the meeting that was the most obvious to me initially was, since we're, you know, why have multiple agencies trying to coordinate with multiple agencies instead of having maybe one central, and then they could kind of control the flow of information. So to me, the recommendations that you've come up with are excellent, and I definitely agree with them. I have no problem supporting them, and with the caveat that we also then, besides just the approval of the recommendations, we approve the forming of a committee to look at implementing them. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have a great deal to add to what's already been said, but I would like to commend the chief and the department on the job they're doing now. And acknowledge that we're not getting a lot of complaints from the citizenry. That said, the reality is out there that the incident could happen tomorrow or right now is still a potential. And everything that we can do to increase our level of training, increase our level of preparedness, increase our ability to respond and bring the numbers to bear in an expeditious time is something we should do. Ideally, we'd have a department where we put four people on every response, on every engine. That's not going to happen. Fiscally, it just is, it's impossible. And consolidation may be the right answer. And I stress that I say may be the right answer, but it's something that's not going to happen immediately. It's something that's going to take time to determine if it's the right step and to incorporate all the little steps that are going to have to go in between now and then. In the meantime, I think it is prudent that we do establish the committee to examine the possibilities, to look at the potentials that are out there. Let's see whether or not there is a place to share positions and to improve training. I do think that if other jurisdictions are going to bear the fruit of the ladder truck, they should also bear the cost of the ladder truck, and we should examine the potentials for spreading the funding out on that.
Have consolidation taking place in kind of a haphazard way through mutual assistance. And the more that we can coordinate that, the better off we are. I think that the one of the problems we're having is looking at the sort of the Cadillac version of consolidation, which is what was presented by CityGate, rather than looking at the sort of a smaller scale version of it, which may provide some efficiencies without the expense. And what we'd be looking at is really just a more coordinated emergency response. And I want to use the word emergency response because we tend to think of the fire department as exclusively a fire department when actually, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think more than 90% of the fire response is in fact medical response. Okay, how far off am I?
It's about 68% is medical in orientation.
Well, thank you for correcting me then. So about two-thirds of it is in fact medical. And, I mean, really all it would take is a couple of major accidents on Highway 101, and not only would all of our firefighters be committed, but so would most of the firefighters in the South County for a major accident on Highway 101. So I think the more that we can coordinate this, the better. I'd actually like to see, I think everything here that staff is suggesting are excellent areas to move forward. I think the one area that I'd like to see in addition to this would actually be to formalize the Grover-Arroyo Grande relationship more than it is now. We have, you know, kind of a shared memo, I guess, is probably all that puts that together. So that if we have the opportunity to align two of the planets, let's align two of the planets so that when the third planet's ready to come into alignment, we have some sort of a format where it could possibly take place. When we see, everybody talks about these for as long as I've been involved, everybody says, oh, yeah, we should have a, you know, a fire department, a police department, a whole lot of coordinated or consolidated entities, and yet they never happen because if everything doesn't happen at once, then nobody's willing to move forward. So I kind of like, I think that would be the one exception I'd like to see us look at formalizing the what we already have going, which has actually worked quite well, and see if we couldn't formalize some sort of an agreement between Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach over the fire department and into a more formal, so that if in fact the other entities are prepared to move forward, then we would have some sort of structure in place where that could take place. I don't know whether the other council people had the opportunity to read over the what I'll call the additional report, which was put together for the city of Pismo Beach to consider their CDF. I think when you read that report, you can see where it's going to be difficult for Pismo in the short run anyway to move forward with consolidation because of some of the financial issues. But I do think that the items put forward here by staff really are a good opportunity to sort of test the level of how far everybody's willing to go, particularly the dispatch. I mean, I think that's, you know, in some ways we look at it as a no-brainer, but it's actually going to require a pretty significant commitment on the parts of not just the fire departments, but also the police departments. So certainly I can support everything here that staff is proposing as areas to work forward, but I'd like to see the additional area of us looking at formalizing our position with Grover Beach if they're open to that.
I just had one thought on that. I'm wondering if that's more appropriate of a topic to bring up in our steering committee that oversees the relationship with Grover Beach, which Councilmember Costello sits on, since it only impacts the two areas.
Staff's recommendations, I think, have taken a much more realistic approach to kind of progressive consolidation, if you would term it that, than the Citygate study. I was not enamored with the findings of the Citygate study. I think some of them were just erroneous. The long and short of it is the city of Arroyo Grande and like everyone else, Terry, you guys have done such a tremendous job. But there's a recognition here that we are a small department. We all are volunteer-driven. We're probably going to be volunteer-driven for a while until we get ourselves in shape where we can move towards a fully paid fire department. That's, you know, that's something that I think all of us have had in the back of our minds. But realizing that, what I would like to see is a recognition that because we are a little bit different, that we breathe some life and some energy into our volunteer firefighter program, and maybe that means intensifying recruitment. And I read the findings in here that we're having problems recruiting. But, you know, I know a handful of young men that and probably women out there, young ladies that would be interested in pursuing something like this, with a recognition that, yes, we're going to spend training money on them, and, yes, their ultimate goal is to move into a full-time position. That's the reality of it, is of our situation. So, but I would like to see us really breathe some life into our volunteer program, and that's going to require some some marketing in the schools and so on and so forth. But there's enough people out there that look towards the fire services as a potential career. They realize they have to start somewhere. And, yes, that means we have kind of a revolving door situation here. We bring new people in and we train them and we set them up to go someplace else. And that's the reality of it. But in the meantime, we possibly could increase our numbers of volunteers, and along with that, we may well get some longer-term volunteers like we have now. We've had people that have been here on a volunteer basis for decades. So I would like to see us focus on that. Looking at Citygate's recommendations, there needs to be one fire chief. I don't agree with that. The department needs competent, certified incident commanders on a 24/7, 365 basis. I do agree with that. But again, I think between the departments, coupled with mutual aid, we don't necessarily need division chief level people. If Joe and I have been teaching incident command for years, And fire captains, given our demographics here, are fully capable, I think, of stepping into an incident commander position. They do it now. And if you have that level of commitment from the other departments in the area and mutual aid, and we start looking at the training component, which also is not new, like Pismo and Oceano, we were going to pursue that at that point, and something happened. I'm not sure what it was, but it seemed as though the we got sidetracked from that. And in terms of the fire marshal and code enforcement, I think we also talked about, of course, our code enforcement, I think at the time was a little bit up in the air conceptually, but we did address some of those things. So, you know, that shouldn't be, those shouldn't be new issues. The other thing that we talked about was the possibility of a PSAP, a public safety answering point, particularly with the responsibility shifting away from CHP for 911 calls and moving into the local jurisdictions. And also when we talked about the possible consolidation of the police departments, the issue of a combined dispatch came up. So, again, this concept is not new. And, you know, I think all of the justification that we've heard from council and supported in this study is not new. But I agree, you know, what we have not done is take that initial step. And this is something that I would like to get some form of an action plan in place. And maybe this committee, this joint committee, undertakes it as a kind of a subcommittee project. But I would really like to see about moving forward with some form of a public safety answering point concept. As you well know, with the grant money tied to interoperability, we're not going to have much of a choice in the future. And maybe that's another thing that the committee can undertake, is some potential federal Homeland Security funding for to set up consolidated dispatch. If it can be demonstrated that it would help us achieve interoperability, and I think it would. As far as the comment that you made about four people on a fire engine, and I know you're new to the committee, but that's something that came before the League of Cities Public Safety Policy Committee, and I believe the Fire Chiefs Association opposed that particular NFPA standard simply because of the viability of it and the money attached to it. So there's a difference between setting a standard and what reality gives us to work with. As far as the sharing of the equipment, I'm fully supportive of that. And I'm hoping that when we do have our joint meeting, that our neighbors will see the benefit in contributing to the costs of some of those big ticket items that we make available to help them. But given that, I think once again, I think the strategy that you've laid out here is doable. And it has been stated, I think what we need in place is obviously concurrence from our partner cities and political subdivisions, and a commitment to put in place some form of an action plan that will actually start getting us off the center and moving forward.
So you'll notice in the recommendations section, our recommendation is more general in terms of as far as what we recommend trying to accomplish at the meeting. I think we worded that just simply determining a means of sharing a position responsible for overseeing joint training between all the South County agencies. So our recommendation at the meeting would be try to just focus on some general commitment on a general goal that could be worked out later in this committee rather than getting into a specific proposal.
Okay. Anything else?
I just wanted to point out that we did receive, of course, the agenda for the January 30th joint meeting, and it is laid out a little bit. It's interesting because we're actually going to be looking at four different questions and, of course, making comments and receiving public input on all these four questions. And, you know, I think we as a council have kind of, we have our own opinions, and I think we're fairly consistent with where staff is coming from here. But it is laid out, just so you can see this, it's laid out a little bit differently. So I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, the first question talks about do cities and the CSD want to pursue consolidation. Reality is we need to define what that word means, and I think we need to look at, you know, exactly what that means to each one of our jurisdictions as to, I think Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie talked about that. There, we are really pursuing consolidation, but we're doing it kind of in steps and those kinds of things. But I think from my perspective, it's just a definition and so forth. And then, of course, we'll get into some of the other issues. We don't have, I mean, the second question talks about what are considerations and limitations. That always becomes kind of an issue for me. I don't know, Steve, have you looked at this and had any comments in regards to, you know, for example, budget, service, unions, employees? I'm not sure if we're going to get into all that much depth. We're certainly not doing that this evening in regards to our discussion, but just want to throw that out as some comments as we move into this next public hearing.
Yeah, I don't see us getting into all those items, but kind of, I had looked generally at the agenda, and for the most part, it seems to flow similar, actually, to some of your comments this evening, is kind of going through their report in terms of, you know, why it may not be feasible, and then from there going into some more specific issues of things maybe we would like to accomplish, and hopefully that'll lead into a discussion of the kind of things we talked about this evening.
Any other comments, observations? Let's get back to item one under recommendation. Establish a committee of one elected official and the manager from each jurisdiction to pursue future joint fire efforts. Is that something we need to do tonight? You want a volunteer?
No, sir, I don't think so. It's just really to give you something to discuss as far as what things that you may bring up at the meeting there.
Okay, so it's a strategy at this point.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, do you need
approve staff's recommendation? It doesn't really actually talk about the forming a committee, whereas that's down as the fourth bullet. So I guess I would suggest that we are willing to support staff's recommendations and agree that we need to form a committee.
Okay, I think we're looking in two different spots. If you look at the face of the staff report, okay. Number one, under recommendation.
Okay, no, I'm fine.
Well, I want a little clarification on this, Steve. Would this would be something that we would go into the meeting with, and we would say, look, we're willing to have one council member and our city manager work with a similar counterpart from each of the jurisdictions in one committee, if you would be willing. That's pretty much our
exactly.
Approach?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then. Let's get back to the content of 1 through 4, then, in the recommendation paragraph. I'm assuming that represents our consensus. Is that correct? Okay. Then I don't think we need a motion. That's pretty much what we'll go in with. Okay. All right, Terry.
Thank you very much to the City Council for the support that the City Council specifically of Arroyo Grande for the support that you've shown toward this. I think that this group of five will be certainly in a leadership role up there as far as your attitudes about it. So thank you very, very much.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That takes us to 11C, consideration. Everybody still okay, Joe? Discussion of, consideration to approve signage and striping improvements at the Traffic Way, Station Way intersection.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. This evening, we'd like to present for your consideration some striping and signing changes on Traffic Way, and specifically at the Traffic Way Station Way intersection. Mike Lynn, our assistant city engineer, is here. He's been working with the Traffic Commission on some of the options and the issues, and I'm going to turn it over to Mike to make the presentation this evening.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of City Council. This was first brought to our attention in April of 2005. We had completed the Traffic Way Bridge Rail project, and the police department determined that while they believe there may be some sight distance issues for cars that were parked at Station Way looking northbound to make a left-hand turn onto Traffic Way, specifically at the bridge, that some of the structural elements were blocking the sight lines. So that's the first concern we have, as you see listed on this bullet. The second came a few months later when the U.S. Post Office had been considering several different spots of where they wanted to relocate their facility to, and they chose 160 Station Way, which is right in the same facility as is Miners. Aerial photo was taken several years before we did the Traffic Way Bridge Rail, so it doesn't show the configuration as it is now. This is a picture that we replicated to be from the driver's viewpoint as he is parked at Station Way looking northbound towards the bridge. As you can see, the structural elements do tend to block the view, and one of the first things we determined was maybe we could take part of those structural elements out, the new concrete bridge rail and the fencing. But unfortunately, they're required due to the drop-off. It's about 4 feet on each side. Once it goes past 4 feet, you do have to have the protection. So a little history. This bridge was built in 1932. And following a conversation with Councilman Guthrie this afternoon, we actually found the original plans for this bridge. And it showed on each side that it was dirt, and there was cow crossings, things of that nature. It wasn't intended to carry the volumes that it's carrying today. And indeed, Station Way was built right about 1969 or 1982. The Traffic Way extension was actually built in 1969. The bridge is actually skewed at a 15-degree angle relative to Station Way. If we went back a couple of slides, that actually makes a great difference. If we were to build this from scratch, obviously, we would not design it this way. But that 15-degree angle does pose a restriction on how far that you can see with that sight distance, obviously. So the required sight distance for the Caltrans Highway Design Manual is 250 feet at 35 miles per hour. So then it was up to us to try to find different options that could increase the sight distance to the 250 feet. Now, originally, prior to doing the Traffic Way Bridge Rail project, the original rail on this bridge, and I have no idea when it was built, and you probably remember better than me, I've only been here 4 years, but it was built from 2x6 lumber and had chain link fence fabric, and its sole purpose was to keep pedestrians from falling off the bridge. But unfortunately, it wasn't very good against vehicular traffic, which was proved, I believe, in 2000. When a vehicle actually ran into the bridge rail and destroyed part of it, which prompted the replacement project. We did the modern technology reinforced concrete for the Traffic Way bridge rail, and Caltrans required it, as should be, that it would have an approved crash-tested design. So it's not something we could just go out and get an engineer to design and have it theoretically. It actually had to go through the crash testing. That project was completed in April 2005. Now, we did research the accident history for this, and our accident history goes back 3 years. Everything past that we shred in accordance with the requirements. We noted there was one accident in 2003 that was directly related to the site distance. 2004, there was no accidents. 2005, on May 3rd, which was witnessed by a lot of people during our emergency training at the fire station, there was an accident, and Station Way which primarily would close the traffic way number 2 southbound lane and would essentially allow us to move the stationway stop bar into that lane 12 feet, and that's shown on the next picture. The bridge isn't shown on this, but it's basically the right about from the arrow of this leader to right about this point. But we would merge the traffic from 2 lanes into 1. This would all be done by a painted median because this is actually an emergency route for the city in terms of evacuation. We would allow the right-hand turn to continue here. We would put traffic islands on each side. Part of this is to protect the stationway vehicle when it's brought forward. This would probably be a low-height median, probably of curbs or something of that nature. And you can't tell from this, but he's actually moved 12 feet, the full distance of the lane, and that's where the stopper would be relocated. From this point, I wish we had an aerial that actually showed it with the bridge, but the site distance is improved to 260 feet. We also checked with Caltrans, because one of the concerns the Traffic Commission had was the traffic is coming from West Branch by the signalized intersection, and you have the free right turn off of East Grand onto Traffic Way going in the eastbound direction. So we thought about possible revisions to the traffic signal there. We left it up to Caltrans. Caltrans actually said that it would be better to put a yield sign at this location, and they checked with their risk managers, and they believe this was the most optimal method and something that if we implemented this plan, that we would keep an eye on, see how effective it was. If something needed to be done at a future date, it could be considered at that time. This is just another close-up to show that you do get the 260 feet of the site distance. So the recommendation of the Traffic Commission, as proposed by Public Works, is to install the option that would close the number 2 southbound lane, which would allow us to move stationway stop bar 12 feet into traffic way, which would increase the site distance 250 feet. Now, the one caveat with the Traffic Commission, they said we could do this as an interim measure, see how it works, see how effective it is, and possibly pursue funding for a traffic signal at a future date. Positive as a traffic signal, obviously, is it eliminates all site distance issues. It does enable relocation of a mid-block crosswalk that is currently at Nelson Street, would allow us to bring it up and would be protected. Mid-block crosswalks are discouraged as normal engineering practice because they're not protected. The negatives, however, is that it is very close to the West Branch signal, and it could pose circulation problems or timing problems more than anything else. And financial considerations that we're currently doing 2 signal projects. We're doing Grand and Halcyon. We're upgrading that signal. And we're also putting in the new signal at Camino Mercado and West Branch. And our traffic signalization fund is somewhat depleted, or will be at the end of the year. And it's primarily funded for the room between Nelson Street, there's a transmission shop, and the bridge. And they thought possibly we could restripe it, which would allow us to move the stop bar without having to perform, would still allow us to have 2 lanes in the southbound direction. But what we found was that you have a relatively wide road trying to merge onto a narrow bridge, and we thought there were safety considerations, and that, again, was thought not to be optimum. So that's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions in the staff report for Mike? Okay. Councilmember Arnold.
I guess looking at one of the slides you showed, actually, at one point it looked like you had proposed possibly to make the right lane a right turn only.
Correct.
Why was that discounted?
Traffic circulation, especially with the post office being in place.
About on traffic way, instead of merging, if you were to stay in the right lane, when you got to station way, you would have to make a right-hand turn. I guess what I'm looking at is the two things that jump out at me is you have it merging fairly early, And so the concern, I know I think there was a letter to the editor and just looking at this, is that you have to merge relatively quickly. And so my two thoughts were, well, if you felt that a merge had to take place prior to getting the station way, why not have there be more room? So basically, thank you. Instead of merging here, maybe merge here, so that way with coming out of the salon and stuff, because you already have a lot going on right here, now to throw this so soon just seems a little bit tight. But the other thing that I was suggesting is if you just had this lane come down and it forced you, if you did not merge prior to this point, you were going to make a right turn lane. This just seems to me that we're trying to create a really tight, a lot of activity going on so close to the intersection. Was there consideration for either of those?
Well, we did look into the taper design length of what was required, and it's not optimum. It's slightly short, and it does have to do with the yielding of the traffic up here. To be quite honest, we didn't propose that particular, at least not that I remember, closing that off completely or allowing solely, splitting the traffic and allowing only a right-hand turn.
So in theory, that could maybe make some sense, because I guess what I'm looking at is I think about the freeways specifically. I think about the freeway where right now you can get off at the when you're heading southbound, you can get off at the 4th Street, and then you have to get over to then get around the on-ramp to get back off at West Branch Street. And to me, it would have seemed to have continued that one little space there would have made a lot of sense. And here, I'm seeing people coming to the post office are going to have to merge.
They have to get over or make a right turn. Now, this specific instance is a little different because we have that pocket. If you get people in that right or second lane, the one closest to the curb, and they decide that they don't want to go there, they're going to either stop traffic from going right or they're going to have to cut in front of somebody to get over to the left, because we're going to have raised type medians at the end of this thing. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is get everybody in one line, and then they can go wherever they want. They can get in that pocket or they can go straight. And so we're trying to make the decision for them. Get in the one lane, and then you can go wherever you want from there. Whereas if you allow them in that lane closest to the curb and they get stuck, they're gonna try to get out of there. They're gonna try to cut in front of somebody. And so we're trying to prevent that. And so this taper is the length of taper that's required as far as the Caltrans manual goes.
I guess playing the devil's advocate on the other side of that is if you get cars that are coming off of West Branch and not realizing they have to merge. Basically, you're counting on signage to a large degree and working. So I guess I'm looking at it as if someone's not willing to read a sign that says lane ends, merge left, right turn only, or if they are going to ignore a sign that says merge and they get stuck there and you have cars coming off a branch making the left turn, in theory, you're going to stop traffic there also. And now if it starts backing up into the parking lot from the salon and stuff, I guess I'm not sure that either one, if people are going to ignore signs, you have the potential for them to cut over. I'm just really concerned with the sheer distance. I mean, we all know that's a pretty busy intersection there. And I guess the idea of forcing you to go left to make a right just seems a little counterintuitive, so...
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we, you know, as we talked to Caltrans about this, we added some additional signs, right turn lane. But my view is that, and I think Caltrans also shares this, is if we can get them to back up in here, there's room to back up in here. That's what it's for. And so you're using that space a little better. You're actually, creating a little pocket there for them to wait before they can get in there. And so that's kind of the reason why we backed it up to that point.
Okay. I'm not sure I agree, but I'll save it for comments. Thank you.
And I'm not sure you agree with that, but that's one of the things we're looking at.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens, any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. All right. Mayor Pro Tem, did you have any questions?
Just a follow-up on the conversation that's happened. Were you able to determine, and this has to do with how busy the intersection is. I mean, we all know that there's lots of northbound traffic, and I was trying to pick out the number of what the actual southbound traffic is. I got it as being, you know, like less than a quarter of the total traffic that's coming there. In other words, there's really not a lot of southbound traffic at this intersection. There's tons of northbound traffic. And I was trying to read the traffic model, and I was asking you to see if you could clarify that tonight. I mean, what is the PM peak? I got it at about 65 trips. But
you know, all we had at the time was information at the intersection of West Branch and Traffic Way. We don't have any volumes of traffic on Traffic Way itself. So we can't compare, you know, what's going north and south as far as the actual traffic volumes. I mean, we have some turning movements at the intersection of Branch with Branch.
So the turning movements don't equal the totals of the traffic? I mean, that's what I was doing, was adding the three movements together.
Well, when you have Station Way and Nelson that also contribute traffic too, you don't get the full the amount of traffic
we're talking about. Though I understand what you're saying, but the section we're talking about is between traffic.
Remember the public, if they want to come forward and comment on this.
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I'm on the Royal Grande Traffic Commission. We did deliberate on this for three separate meetings. It was the primary topic on all three meetings. None of the traffic commissioners were thrilled with losing a lane on Traffic Way. We had general consensus was that we're possibly taking a intersection that will be getting a lot more traffic because of the post office, but still it is an intersection that does not have anywhere near the traffic that would warrant a signal for level of service, and nowhere near the traffic that happens at West Branch and or East Branch and Traffic Way. That was our primary concern and why we wanted to have a look back on the change in the lane. We didn't want to take one intersection that was potentially dangerous and move that danger to another intersection. There's no gain in doing that. So if it hopefully there won't happen with signage, I think the yield, even though it is a very short merge, is done regularly. People yield at the freeway. People yield in that situation with much less drive out ability to merge in a lot of different traffic situations in the city, which makes it different than a stop, which you couldn't have because you have a light there, so you can have a corresponding stop sign, and different than a free pass, and then requiring people to then merge having made the free pass. It's a difficult situation. I would not like to see it become more dangerous to the public than the initial line of sight. The real problem is the abutment and the fence at the bridge, and potentially that could be maybe mitigated by increasing the pad. Right now there's a set of steps that come up to the top of that bridge right by the creek. That pad might be able to be increased from around 4 feet to 8 feet, allowing a safe haven for people who are going to be crossing the street right there, even though there's no crosswalk, to get to the post office, and also eliminate the drop-off problem. That also would be probably a financial concern for the city. I just wanted to let the council know that we struggled over this quite a bit, looked at a lot of different options, talked out a lot of different options, and really short of redoing the bridge, could find no other method of mitigating the line of sight. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other members of the public, so we'll close public comment and come back to council. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Suggestion I would make is we already have a left turn arrow here from people coming on West Branch that have the opportunity to turn left here. I think we have a green arrow now. Can we maybe synchronize and put a red light here that would be timed so that you would have a red light here when there was a green arrow here? And once that green arrow goes away, then it would simply be a merge, a yield. I don't know, is that possible? I don't know, maybe we're talking about a lot of money to do that.
That is actually what we suggested with Caltrans, based on what the Traffic Commission comments were. And they told us that it's best to try out the yield first, see how it works. And one thing I probably should mention is this is meant, it's like when we did traffic control on East Branch when we were doing that project. Or not East Branch, East Grant. And we did the big beautification project, putting in the islands. You put it out there, and you sit and you watch it, and you make modifications as best you can, you know, based on the behavior of the drivers. And we didn't mean to just put this out there and leave it. It'd be something that we would monitor its effectiveness. It's just striping and a little bit of raised curb. If it's not effective, we can always take it out. And that's the way that Caltrans felt about putting in the yield sign. See if it works. See if people accept it. If they don't, then they can consider something else.
I think as an interim, I think this is the most palatable of the solutions that's there as a temporary. And I can support it if we keep our options open, then I think maybe we will end up needing that red light here. There is a fair amount of traffic that's making this right-hand turn here at this point. I don't think it's going to go away. If anything, the demand is going to go up, and we're going to have more traffic flowing this way. The post office is already located down there, but it's now going to be closer into that intersection. It's going to make things a little bit more complicated, but I can support the recommendations that I see before me at this time.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, yeah, I certainly sympathize with the Traffic Commission because I know that this is a difficult configuration, and I think that no one wants to close a lane. But as I look at this, I think this is the most prudent approach, and I like the fact that it's flexible in that we can modify it over time. I think the biggest problem with this will be the retraining of all of us, and I travel this on a daily basis, making this right-hand turn into this area. It's a retraining. And right now, when I drive through here, that road is mine. It's ownership. I mean, it's just the way it is, and I don't want to yield for anybody. And I think that it's just going to be re-educating ourselves right here. If that becomes an issue and becomes a situation where some of us folks don't like to be retrained, and we see more problems here, then as Councilmember Costello pointed out, we can certainly put a red light here. I think we would need a red light for not only the left hand, but there's actually a specific green light coming out of this area here. So both of those times, we'd have to probably just put a red here and just tell us folks that are used to driving right through there without stopping that we need to stop. I don't think that the traffic volumes in and of themselves are going to be a problem. It's mainly to make sure that they have the sight distance and they can cross that intersection safely. So I like what's being proposed. I think we may hear a little bit of grumbling with this here, but I think it will certainly be effective. And I've certainly have sat at this trying to make a left hand out of there for quite a while and not feeling very comfortable. So I think this will help mitigate that.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I think I'm going to be the contrarian tonight. Considering that this piece right here, the way I see it, if we're looking at doing steps, this obviously would be the first step that has to be done, whether what I'm saying or whether the merge is here. So I'm just really have a problem where we're going to say we're going to merge left to make a right-hand turn. I think the stop sign or stop light down here makes a lot of sense if we were going to have this here. My concern is that a yield sign, I think for most people, they're going to disregard it. And so I think you're going to have a lot of activity going on right here. I would rather see a little bit more time. I realize what you, Councilman Dickens said is possibly accurate, where someone could expect that a car in the right-hand lane is going to make a right-hand turn and then could merge. My concern is that we are now transferring a lot of what is we're trying to protect down here to this area. So without having a stoplight here to stop the traffic from continuing flowing through, I think we are creating a more dangerous situation right now. So I believe that I will vote against this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I think I can support Traffic Commission's study of this here, that this is the best, at least as an interim solution. I would like to see us looking forward. Can you go back to the picture that shows the actual sight line? Right here. Yeah. I think what I'd like to see us look at is what it would take to I understand you can't just remove this. That would be the obvious one. And I know that Mr. Ross was suggesting that adding here, you could at least take off maybe one section of this. And I don't think that's enough to accomplish what you need to accomplish. I know it sounds really Rube Goldberg, and I suggest this to you. What would be the possibility of actually, I'm going to say, since you have to have this six-foot fence, I'll call here, of actually cantilevering it out so that instead of sitting out here, it sits back here, and then protecting the area below, compared to $175,000 signal, it might be a lot cheaper. Now, it's a huge expense to do, and maybe you could do it halfway, and it would be... But I would like to see us look at trying to solve the sightline problem rather than simply solve the traffic flow problem. So that's something, certainly not something, you know, it's just a general direction. It just seems like there's got to be a way to solve this problem. I actually think that trying to create the right-hand turn lane ends up, as you've described, be a trap. As people come down into it, there is no way out of it. So I think this is probably by far the best solution. I do think this is actually far more.
Okay, thank you. Mike, could you go back to the drawing? Yeah, that's good. A couple things. Did anyone approach the post office and ask them about contributing to a signal out here? Well, let me elaborate on that. I was at another meeting unrelated to this, Zone 11A, and I had a sidebar with Mike Whiteford, who represents Congressman Thomas. And we had a quick conversation about the new post office coming in, and Mike asked if we were happy with the way things were going. And I told him we had some concerns about the location. And his comment to me was, you should have brought us aboard. Maybe we could have run interference with the post office. I'm not sure if that's still doable, but it would seem to me that at this juncture, the post office is a done deal. However, mitigating the impacts of the post office in terms of traffic circulation is not a done deal, perhaps. So I would recommend, Steve, that we make contact with Mike, ask him to come out, ask him to review the situation and see whether or not the post office can, in fact, help us out a little bit with our signalization fund.
So I just want to get clarification. Yeah, there's no problem talking to them. Are we trying to get them to contribute towards the signal or actually
yes.
fund the signal?
Well, perhaps whatever they're willing to do.
Because we have had those discussions with them, and the post office had basically in their negotiations required all the improvements to be made by the owner of the building, and the owner of the building refused to make any improvements. So that's kind of where those negotiations went, but I'd be, certainly be glad to call Mike Whiteford and see if there's any assistance they can provide.
Well, that's why they're there, is to try and run interference for us and maybe open some doors that we can't directly do. And so I would be willing to support pursuing that. It may not bear fruit, but certainly worth a try. And because it's clear to me that none of these options in the long run are going to work with that post office in place. They're not going to work well. We ultimately need a signal. And I think with the timing, I realize the proximity issue, but we have that issue elsewhere in the city. And with some good timing, I think we can make this work. I think there are probably areas where we have exactly this distance between two sets of signals and it works. Getting back to the interim measure, and I understand the challenge here, but I see this option as being horribly untenable and problematic. And I know why Caltrans is saying, let's go with the yield spec from Wesley isn't the problem. The left turn traffic off of Branch is a problem. So I think if we do nothing but synchronize this left turn arrow with this right turn light, that in and of itself might help considerably. But moving farther down, I guess I'm going to play contrarian with council member, what's your name again?
He's contrarian today.
Yeah.
Remember the Arnold plan.
Yeah, with council member contrarian, I see more merit in this recommendation to, if we're going to take a step back and observe, then I think we ought to opt to observe a right turn lane that begins here with perhaps a raised curb. And I understand what you're saying, Don, that people are going to try to weasel out of that. But if we raise this curb and have it actually feed into a right turn pocket, so they look ahead and they say, whoops, I goofed. Looks like I got to go right because I can't go left, even though I really want to, unless they jump that curb. If we put that about right here, then I think we're accomplishing the same thing. If they can see it from over here, if they can see that that they've got a what amounts to a developing right lane, right turn only lane here that is starting back here. Then from here, they can, when a light turns green, they can plan to get over in the left lane. But, and that gives them time to do that. And maybe on their own, they're going to yield in here until it's clear enough to get over and get out of it. But it would seem to me that we ought to try something like that first and see how it works. And then go to this. But to immediately cut off one traffic lane here, I don't know. It seems to me that the majority of the traffic that makes a right turn on Traffic Way, I know it's that way on the weekends, they're going into this center. They're going into Miners. They're going to go to the post office. They're going to these shops back here. That's where the bulk of the traffic is going to go. And I think once behavioral patterns change, they'll adapt to this. If that approach doesn't work, then go to something like this. But I'm cutting from two lanes down to one right here with no option, in my mind at least, causes more problems than doing what Councilmember Arnold was suggesting. I support that approach with the addition of putting a raised curb between the lines here, and on the pavement, maybe we can just put right turn only, right turn lane only. So they know from this point to this point, they know they got to get over, And the majority of them probably will say, hey, I'm doing good. I'm in the right lane. I can go straight ahead and get in here. So
they basically take kids from Paulding and West down and make that turn and go down traffic way. You put permanent structures in the way that would cut down the ability to use all four lanes if need be or all four evacuation. It is a designated route for evacuation during Diablo Canyon incidents. That was part of the reasoning behind not putting a permanent structure that far up the road. Thank you.
What are you talking about, Steve? You're talking about
Diablo Canyon, yeah.
You're talking about this here?
Right there. If we put permanent dividing line that would not allow any kind of through traffic across the bridge.
Well, how is that different than this pocket here, which would
be permanent? Because if that is just painted and raised bumps, you could still drive across it.
Well, I can tell you right now that the evacuation route, you know, I don't know what you're looking at, but the evacuation route for the schools, this may be secondary, but the primary is going to be straight ahead to 101 South because that's going to be one way on both sides out of Dodge. Yeah. It's not going to be surface street. Sorry, Mike, didn't mean to zap you in the eyeball.
It's just designated on their map.
It's designated on the map, but that's not the evacuation plan for Diablo Canyon. Diablo Canyon is going to use 101 on both sides, north and south, and both sides of the freeway will be southbound. Traffic will be cut off way down on 166. So,
Ms. Mayor, I had that conversation fairly recently with county, and they said they weren't going to be using they weren't going to make 101 same flow both directions the same way. This was within the past 2 months.
Well, something major has changed then.
I specifically asked that question.
They're going to have one side of the freeway open because if we have an incident in Diablo Canyon with the wind direction, northbound traffic is not going to be allowed. What are they going to do with the other side of the freeway?
That was my question to them, and I was told it was going to be for emergency traffic, but they weren't going to turn it into a both flow the same way.
Okay, well, emergency traffic I can see, but still in all, that's the evacuation, the main evacuation route. Southbound traffic way as an evacuation route isn't going to get you anywhere but back on the freeway.
And, Mr. Mayor, I'd also comment that if we've got this as a raised median here anyway, we've just restricted the flow. So how much difference does it make if you put the barricade here and stop, you know, prevent traffic here? We've got the impediment here anyway, so how much difference will that make?
I do have to correct that. We did change that after that last meeting from raised curb to low-height delineators for that very reason, because we wanted the people at Station Way to be protected. But once it became that it might be an emergency route, we felt that the low-height delineators would serve the same purpose and prevent people from going through, but could be removed if need be.
Well, then it would seem that the divider that the mayor was talking about could be the same low-height delineator instead of a curb.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think, both strategies we can try, but in terms of a strategy,
I was just going to add, I would certainly support, looking at the potential of signalization here, because I think that would solve a lot of these issues. But I would disagree with the concept that the majority of the traffic's making a right-hand turn into that area. It doesn't happen. The majority of the traffic is flowing right through, you're going to find that. The proposal, from my perspective, if I'm driving that, you're going to find that what you're seeing up there is going to actually be adequate and actually serve the flow through this particular area. Those that are making the right-hand turn are going to have no problems. They've already made the adjustment through the merge, and I think the real question is whether we move forward with a a yield sign, as Caltrans has suggested, or directly just move forward with doing some lighting. I think, to me, that's really going to be the key. The issue of extending that out and allowing for a right-hand turn, and I think that's going to create more confusion. But, again, that's just probably a difference of opinion.
Okay. Anyone else? I think we probably beat this to death. Did you have something else?
Just one quick one. It has to do with the lighting at Branch and Traffic Way. Once you start holding up that free right-hand turn, you're going to start clogging up Branch, which has tremendous amount of flow through. So you're going to hold it up for, I'm going to say, 15 to 20% of the signal time. Those cars are going to start to back up onto Branch and are actually going to start holding up Branch going eastbound. So if you put a stoplight there for when Vernon's coming through and when they're making the left turns off Branch, you are going to cause some sort of congestion on the through traffic at Branch.
Well, that's where the timing comes up, because that comes up because the right turn lane extends quite a ways down beyond this intersection, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't it, Don?
Yes, it does.
So you got some room there, and if you don't, and if you time it, I'm not saying hold it up, but let the traffic flow trigger the timing. And, you know, there are ways to do that so that you can not experience a queue back here. It's a whole issue that we took a look at Briscoe, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but we're dealing with an unreasonable amount of volume there. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, well, I think probably we need to try something. So, if there's no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, if the council feels that the right turn, the dedicated right turn is an option, we can go with what we've recommended here, review that in a month or so, and then try the other one as well. I mean, we can do some different things with the way we've set it up as being a temporary kind of using delineators as opposed to some permanent solutions. That's one thing we can do.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I would like to see us experiment. I mean, Councilmember Dickens and I have these unique kind of short K-bar or K-rails that are connected, and they have this huge machine that actually feeds them in. It's on wheels. It feeds them in and changes the direction of the K-rails. And actually closes off lanes and opens up other lanes. And what they do is they actually change it given the hour of the day. And it changes the flow pattern. So I think in principle, if we can experiment a little bit here, you know, maybe that would satisfy everyone's needs. And we would, you know, pretty much have a plan that works, at least on an interim basis.
Is there a logical progression as to which one we should try first in terms of your construction time or rearranging time and establishing patterns and looking at behaviors? Does it make more sense to try one before the other?
I would say that we would try the ones that we recommended first and then go with a change after some amount of time after that.
Well, also, I think what we were thinking, I mean, pursue whatever direction the council likes. But when we talked about pursuing one and maybe the other, I think our thinking was more if the first one doesn't work, then we'd move on and try the second. I'm not sure if everybody was happy with the first one, I'd hate to go ahead and try the other one. And after everybody's people driving are all kind of adjusted to one thing.
Yeah, I think I'd echo that because, you know, all we have to do is put the public's not going to like either of these solutions. And all we need to do is put them through two of them. You know, if the first one works, then I don't know why we would even go with whatever the second one was. I'm inclined to say that we should go with this one first with the understanding that we're prepared to come back and try something else if in fact this doesn't work. I just see the right-hand turn is very problematic. I wouldn't be able to support that at all.
Yeah, just one thing I'd like to add, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but we are going to do it a lot of it. Advanced notification. We're going to put up boards. We're going to put things in the paper. on the cable channel and try as best we can to get the message out to the public before making these changes. At least a couple weeks.
Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting because I concur with Councilmember Arnold. I can't see forcing traffic to merge left so they can turn right. And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. Okay. Somebody try a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the council approve the signage and striping improvements for traffic ways recommended by the Traffic Commission.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Well, I have some discussion with the understanding that if the option 5 does not work, that we look at other alternatives. Would you be willing to
amended? Yes, sir.
Would you be willing to go along with that?
Yes, you could.
Okay. And that takes us to item 12, City Council Reports. And I'll go first. SLOCOG has not met since the holiday break, and we have a meeting coming up. But I do think, Steve, there is a notation regarding staff's recommendation on some of the STIP funding.
Yeah, the initial good news is, the initial staff recommendation includes both funding for the Village Streetscape project and then also over $5 million associated with the auxiliary lanes with the Briscoe Housing Project, which we've been kind of trying to define as maybe the first phase of Briscoe Housing.
Right, and that's the pretty much the Caltrans operational plan for South County that got put back in. Just want to make sure that we understand that although it will help somewhat, it certainly is not significant mitigation for Briscoe Housing, but it will help, I think, with some of the traffic flow down here with the continuation lanes.
Well, I think the biggest thing is it's hopefully a first step towards getting the other funding for the whole project.
Right.
That's what we're hoping.
South County Sand District has met. There's nothing significant to report. A lot of routine issues on the maintenance of the plant. Once again, I think I mentioned it at the last meeting, but I'll mention it again. Really did want to congratulate the Sand District staff for their work during the storm. And I think I mentioned, I'll mention it again, the flows into the sanitation, the treatment plant increased tremendously with the storm water, yet every bit of water or substance, and without going into a lot of detail, was treated, and there was no raw sewage that was put into the ocean, and I think we were the only ones, at least in South County, that can make that claim. And so the staff of the Sand District worked very hard to make sure that did not happen. That concludes my report. And Mayor Pro Tem, EVC.
The EVC's December meeting was their Christmas party, so a very short meeting. Nothing to report from that. They did have great caterer, I will say that. One sidelight we're looking at one of the subcommittees that I'm on is what they call the data collection committee, which I know is something that we in the county were both interested in, and we're looking at doing through Cal Poly some economic impact reports on. First, they're going to look at some business by business, what some of the larger business, but also industry by industry. And I think that might be one of the tools we're looking for, that when we look at a certain store coming in or a hotel coming in, what the economic, we look at the bed tax, of course, and those kinds of things, but what the economic impact is as far as jobs and housing and, what other services may be required based on that business. So I think that's one of the things that we may find a tool that's useful in the future. If I can jump in, I did the SCAT meeting as well. Yes. So let me just jump in, and I did this as the alternative on the SCAT. Not a whole lot to report there.
Member Dickens, we already heard the SCAT report, so South County Youth.
I have not been able to attend South County Youth, so I have no report this evening.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In terms of the Zone 3 Water Advisory Board, we met last week, and there were a couple of items, and I've got them under City Council Member items that I'll just wait until we get to that and bring them up. We'll mention that we're looking at the different financing alternatives for the upgrade of the water treatment plant, and I would like to get some feedback from the other council members on that, as well as some of the issues regarding the Habitat Conservation Plan. Air Pollution Control District meeting is tomorrow. I'll be attending that in the morning. The key issue on that is the budget status, and we're under budget for where we are in the year, so things are progressing nicely on that. Fire Oversight Committee, the next meeting will be Friday, the 10th of February. Our last meeting was in December. I did attend that meeting. And the cooperation between the departments continues in a very favorable manner. The training has been excellent. They continue to invite Oceana to participate when possible, but that still continues to be kind of difficult. But the day-to-day operation of the two departments is working very well, and the training issues are being addressed as can be at this time. Although I do think that they can be better. That's all I have for the council this time.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Integrated Waste Management meeting was canceled for January. We have not had a Joint Powers Insurance Authority meeting. I think they're just once a year. And unfortunately, I had a scheduling conflict and was unable to attend the RAC meeting. That's all I have.
Okay. Item 13 is City Councilmember items. We have two this evening, both from Councilmember Costello. So 13A, discussion of financing alternatives.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At this point, I just like to mention the options that are out there. We have four different options that are presented, and there is some disagreement in Zone 3. We have not brought this forward for a decision at this point. The expected shelf life of the improvement to the water treatment facility is going to be about 30 years. The four funding options we have are the 20-year state revolving fund, which is a 20-year process, which actually has the lowest rate of interest. Then there's a 20-year bond pool, which would also have 20-year payments with a slightly higher rate of interest.
Joe, let me cut in for just a second here. Is it the intent of is it your desire to bring this packet back to our agenda?
It's my desire to provide some information to you tonight, not to get a decision tonight, but so that you'll know the issues, and perhaps it might be best to just give this to the manager and staff and have it presented. But I would like to get some sort of concurrence from the council so that when I next go forward to the next meeting, that I'll have some sort of consensus. I know where I'd like to go with this. I just want to make sure that my thoughts on this are consistent with what the rest of the council wants. Spread out over the 30 years, but they ultimately are greater payments are made. And then a 35-year bond pool, which presents the lowest annual payment, but again, spread out over 35 years, gives you the greatest amount paid back. My intention on this is to go with the state revolving fund annual payment with the lowest real rate of interest. Makes the most sense to me. I'm not sure that that's going to be supported by everyone in the Zone 3, in the Zone 3 area. So I wanted to see if I had some sort of feedback. What are your thoughts on this, gentlemen?
I agree. State fund.
And was that one of the 20-year plans?
That is one of the two 20-year plans.
So the
and it has a lower rate of interest than the other 20-year plan.
Okay, yeah, I'd also have to agree with that.
You have comments?
Well, I think it's hard to make decisions based on just the information you're providing for us. So I'd hate to comment and give you any direction. I'd rather see this come back in a quick staff report and look at the pros and cons. But, as far as what the impact will be to the ultimate user, I think, is the folks that are actually paying the their water bills, and I think that's really what I need to look at. So,
and I would concur, Joe, I'm not in a position right now to support one funding measure or strategy over another because, you know, I want to unwrap this thing. I want to take a look at what they're proposing for the water treatment plant. I am very concerned about people opening their water bill, and you know, we're still paying for the retrofit of the dam and all of those other costs that are now going to be associated with this project. And you know, I know we got to do it, but I don't have near enough information right now in terms of the scope of the overall project to jump right to funding.
That's why I thought that I'd bring it up at this time and again get it scheduled. One comment I would make, though, is I will be unavailable for both of the meetings in February, so I'd like to see this on the first meeting in March.
When do you anticipate voting?
We don't have another meeting until March.
Okay, so there's okay, and what we're going to bring back is not just the funding, but in fact, it sounds like a review of the whole.
No, I think the project is already set. The only thing left for discussion is the funding.
And I guess if we're going to direct staff, I'd like to have staff come back and get at least some initial, impacts, but increases to the water bills. When we look at these, I think I understand what Councilmember Costello is talking about in regards to paying off the loan and financing this thing, but we also have to look at what it means to the day-to-day customer use. And you know, there may be benefits to do a 35 because it takes it over a longer period of time. But I need to see those rates and what that might mean to the customer.
What I'll probably do is have our director
plan that's coming forward to formalize a low reservoir response plan, and this was not clarified for me at the last meeting we had with Zone 3, would include measures that would be taken by the local jurisdictions to deal with that. So I'd like to see if we could maybe get staff to bring some more information forward on that so we have a better understanding idea of what that really means.
As the habitat plan, I believe it was presented to us in draft form, a couple years ago, I believe.
Absolutely, yes.
And is it changed significantly since then?
No, it has not, but it has not been accepted by, I think, Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife.
We could probably work with somebody at the county to make a brief overview of the plan since you've already seen it, but then more kind of update you on the status and the process and where we're getting hung up in the process.
I think particular interest to me was when we started talking about this low-level plan, it started asking for specific actions from the local jurisdictions, and I'd like a little bit more guidance on that before I go back and present anything to the board meeting myself.
Okay.
Thank you.
You okay with bringing
yeah.
that back?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. We're good with that one. Anything else, Joe?
That's fine. Thank you.
All right. That takes us to 14 city manager items. None this evening, Steve?
Nope.
Any council communication? Stefan? Staff communication?
Nope.
All right, takes us to 17, community comments and suggestions. We have no community out in the audience right now, at least not physically. So that takes us to 18, adjournment.
So moved.
Very good. We are adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen.